Blog Talk Radio.
You'll try to turn the conversation to anything except building an economy, because an economy can be measured in concrete numbers, and that's the real reason that you don't want to discuss an economy. You don't want to discuss finances and money, because finance and money can be measured in concrete terms. You don't want to discuss concrete terms. You don't want to talk about that. You want somebody to tell you that losing is okay, that poverty is okay, that being enslaved is okay. Because that's what your parents and your grandparents and everyone before them taught them. And now it's trickled down to you. So I ask this today to find out from you, do you know what it means to be free? Do you understand that your religion has failed you? That your politics has failed you? That your educational institutions have failed you? Do you understand that? I want to find out what people are thinking there. So let's just go ahead and open up the phone lines now. And we'll give you your opportunity to call in, to speak in, and to be heard. Telephone lines are already lighting up, which is a good thing. Caller, you're on live with the Black Channel.
We on?
Yes, you're on. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
How's it going? I just heard a little bit that you were talking about as far as the institutions failing the individual.
Your institutions failed you too, because they didn't teach you how to listen cognitively. I asked you what was your name and where are you calling from?
No problem. My name is James Smith, calling from North Carolina. I like the topic that you have. I'm a correctional officer out here in North Carolina. And I see so many different times the different inmates that come in and how they are. And it's fitting the description that you're talking about tonight, sir.
Now, what kind of offenders do you guard?
Well, I have maximum control. We're talking about multiple murders, homicide, child molester, the worst of the worst.
Would you say that the majority of your prisoners are Black?
Yes, indeed they are. I would venture to say, and this is just an approximate estimate, I would give you about maybe, let's say, about 80%. Most come from single-family homes, mother head of household, Negro community. Most are hypoglycemic, special diets, and most lack critical thinking skills.
So most of them, you say, have dietary requirements.
Yes, a lot of them do. A lot of them don't even know that they have actual dietary issues with the intake, because there's so much sugar pumped into the diet, changes the different goes on in the body. So, you know, I'm a social scientist as well, so I'm also working and studying at the same time.
What would you say, in your opinion? Well, let me find out a question here. How many of your prisoners are religious, would you say?
Religious, you know, and it's funny that you asked, because just last week I just took the sample. I would venture to say, and this is just an approximate, it's not definite, I would say well over 90%.
I'm wondering if they understand the irony of 90% of them are religious and yet they're in jail.
In fact, I don't think it. I think they fail to connect the dots, sir. But tonight, the reason why I'm calling is not necessarily in reference to them. However, I'm calling you because my friend recommended that I speak with you, because he thinks you have good wisdom, sir. So I respectfully want to call and ask a question.
All right. What is your question?
Here it is. Like I said, I'm working for a Department of Corrections here in North Carolina. However, I feel like I'm underemployed. I'm a graduate degree student here at FSU, Fayetteville State University, and I tell you it is exceptionally hard to find a job, and the jobs that I do find I feel a lot of times as if I'm overqualified and I'm really considering going into business for myself. I would like to know, what are your thoughts on that, sir?
Okay, well, first of all, you're getting a degree in sociology?
Yes, sir.
The only thing that you can do with that degree is to become the warden of the prison. That's the only thing that degree will give you, and that's going to be about the extent of it. Degree is worthless.
I don't know. I'm not the average sociology student. I'm actually a creator of several sociology sub-disciplines. The degree for me has not been the issue. It's just finding self-worth as far as the degree and the job outlook in general.
Yeah, but that degree has no job outlook is what I'm trying to explain to you.
Okay, so your opinion, which degree would you say has high value, for lack of a better term, sir?
Sciences and technology are the only degrees that have any type of value. Everything else is, technically speaking, everything else would just be a hobby degree that you're getting. Science and technology are the only thing that have anything that are going to have any upward value to them. If you can't count it and if you can't add it, then it's worthless as a degree.
I don't know. I mean, I agree, but at the same time, I have to respectfully disagree with that statement.
Okay,
because,
what can you do with that sociology degree? We're talking about people don't understand that their education has failed them, so I'm very glad you called in because it seems like you don't understand that that has failed you also. Tell me, what business can you start with a degree in sociology?
Trend forecasting.
Okay, that's a business you can start, or you can go to work in that field.
You can actually do both, to be honest with you. A lot of times people mistake, especially corporations, they need us to actually let them know if their product is going to be worthwhile in the future. So they have a wonderful, great idea, okay? But they need to know, will the people or the specific demographic will catch on to that idea? You see what I'm saying?
Okay, well, I understand what you say about it's possible. Yeah, I guess it's possible. But the problem is that as a field, it's not going to go very far. You have a few firms that's why they have, you know, focus group testing. That's why we have marketing. I mean, those pretty much have taken the place of all that as far as future trends. Steve Jobs didn't need that either. Hell, Facebook didn't get started on a future trend. It got started with a good idea. So what you're saying, I understand that can be a niche. That can be a niche. Don't get me wrong. I mean, yeah, a person that could have a niche to it, it's possible, but it's going to be extremely limited. That's not something that we can give to a large number of people. It's just focus group testing or political pollsters. There's only going to be a few people who can do that. That's not going to be a growth field that a lot of people can get into. It's just not.
Well, when we're talking about the STEM sciences, again, for people who don't know, the science, technology, and math, and different things like that, it's not that the education itself has failed them. In a lot of aspects, it has, but not totally. What I'm seeing as a sociologist is that people are coming into the educational system lacking the skills that's necessary to even succeed in the academia setting. You see what I'm saying? A lot of times our students are coming in, they are first-time college students, meaning that nobody in their family has ever even been to college. They've never even seen a college. So those students have it harder the most. Now, when you talk it down to the primary school level, again, we're talking in terms of sociology, and more specifically within the Negro community, there is a little something called the looking glass self. And when we have the looking glass self, is that Negroes, a lot of time within this country, often internalize the negative images that the society projects onto them. So they in turn embrace these images and they portray them out. And that is one of the biggest things that I've seen as a sociologist that limits the growth of Negroes within this country.
Well, I mean, I think you have points there. The problem with a degree like yours being in a business is that a business would not need them. A business needs accountants. A business needs engineers. A business needs computer science. Doesn't really need a sociologist. I mean, what you're saying is that, wait a minute, there's a way sociologists can be advantageous. And you are correct. There are ways that it can be advantageous. The only problem is wouldn't actually need it. I can understand it. What you're saying is that they're useful. Well, yeah, I mean, sociology can be useful. Psychology can be useful. You know, I mean, I use it all the time. I've got psychology in my family. Of course, I understand that they can be useful. But someone is asking about building an economy and how do I enter the sphere of building an economy, even though I understand that the other things are useful. I think music is useful. I would never tell someone to get a degree in music. I would, and corporations use music too. I would never tell them to do that.
Well, I wouldn't suggest that either. However, it depends on the ambition of the individual when they get to college. They have a choice to make, and that choice is, am I coming to college to get a better job, to get better pay, or am I coming to college solely to learn for knowledge? Now, we have people that's in the artistic field, such as music or art or photography or something like that. A lot of times, those people are coming in because they have a passion to learn something. And again, you also have people who come in to look for something, how you say, more concrete, such as earning more money. So when you talk in terms of accountants, like right now I have a friend of mine, Sheena, very good friend of mine. She's actually an accountant. Yes, she does taxes, and she's a financial manager over at a bank. And to this day, she's even having a hard time finding a job as an accountant because now she's finding out that a lot of businesses don't really need accountants. They have so much software, so many different apps that are being created by the STEM field, which is fine. But the STEM field at one point in time will, if possible, become oversaturated, such as they did in the computer science field. If you remember the big dot-com bubble, everybody rushed. They said, oh, my God, I have to get a job in computers, get a job in computers, and people did. What happened? The field became oversaturated. Now you have programmers
can't
even find a job.
The field did not become oversaturated. That's not true.
Well, right now, to prove that, I can actually prove it. I had a IT personnel who was laid off from Fayetteville State University. It took him over a year to find a job. And the job he found as a programmer with over 12 years of experience came after 1 year at a community college.
Okay, first of all, from him, I would want to know, he's a programmer. What language does he program?
All of them. C, C+, he's Cisco certified. It's just oversaturated right now.
No,
but
sir.
But then again, it can also
first
be
all,
my demographic
all,
area.
First of all, the answer that you gave is absolutely unbelievable. You said all of them. No programmer knows all languages. Nobody.
12 years plus. We're talking 12
I don't
years
care.
Plus.
Well,
continuous
I don't
training.
Care if it's 100 years plus. He does not know all the languages.
Let me clarify. Major languages.
Okay, here's the problem.
Major.
The problem is your friend not studied Java, because if he did, he'd have plenty of offers. What happens with computer programmers is that they behave much like the rest of the population. They get one skill. They become a one-trick pony, and they will bone up on edging that particular one. With C, they'll go C, C+, C++. But today, with the explosion of Internet, HTML used to be the thing, and they're moving over to XHTML, and that's fine. But the problem is that where the money is, you will get a job knowing HTML and XHTML. You will be able to do that. But if you want to be in with everybody else at a base rate, Java will be where your opportunities will be. So as a programmer, the money moved was what happened. So he learned, now C++ was perfectly fine and is still perfectly fine today, only for specific things. Most of the programming world is moving into internet, has moved into internet, which means Java and Perl. Those are going to be your two.
I'm quite
Perl
sure you have
a
that as
very
well, sir.
In-depth programming language. So Perl is not for the faint of heart, and it's not for people who don't already know their programming. In some respects, we'd say the same for Java, but if you had to choose one or the other, we'll take Java. But my point is that if he was going to – the market did not go away. The need for programmers did not go away. It changed.
Of course.
That's what
and
happened.
It always
it changed. Because in 2000, what happened? You're talking about the dot-com bust. It wasn't the dot-com bust that did anything to them. The problem was that you had old programmers of basic C++, who the dot-com bubble had burst, but the need for internet programmers did not go anywhere, but those people that are still on the street did not change their skill set. And there's a number of different reasons you don't, but it's pretty much the same. They did not change
their skill set. I can't definitely speak for him because I don't know his entire skill set.
Okay, I can. I can. You can't, but I can. So, do you have another question about that?
No, I don't have any questions about that.
I know plenty of programmers. I know plenty of programmers, and the only ones who still don't have a job, and they will admit it, are the ones who did not change over to an internet type of language as opposed to the old baseline programming. Back when we were doing, back mostly you were making video game consoles, C++ was fine. When we were first building Windows, C++ was fine. All that's been taken care of at this point. We don't need any more people to build operating systems, not the way we used to. We need people to build applications and to build networking applications.
Right, and this is what I'm very quite aware of this. And like I say, this man has also been an IT personnel. In fact, he was over in the department over at NC State. This is a very qualified man. Like, I don't know all of his qualifications.
Apparently
but
not.
He's very qualified.
Okay, the fact that you said he was looking for a job for a year means apparently he's not very qualified. I'm sorry if you thought he was. Apparently, he's not. Not just apparently. Obviously, he's not. Obviously.
I don't know. I can't. Like I said, I cannot make that determination. I do
time,
not know all of the variables, sir.
One more time, I do.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you a question, like I said. And respectfully, now, this man, I've pretty much had contact with him for about 3 years, and I don't know all of the variables. However, you're on the line saying that you know this variable, and you don't even know the man.
I don't have to know the man.
I struggle.
I don't have to know the man. I studied computer programming.
Okay. And you, like I said, I'm not here to challenge anything like that.
Wait a minute. Oh, no. You're not going to run around like that now on the Black Channel. I just said
no. I don't challenge. I don't challenge.
What I'm saying is that, sir, you got to stop talking. You're going to have to stop talking, brother. Because once you say I don't, once you say the words I don't know, at that point you're supposed to be quiet and let somebody who does know talk. If you said you don't know and I told you I do know and here's the reason why, at that point you ain't got no more objections. Because
I don't know.
You've already said, I don't know. You keep saying it over and over again. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. We got it. You're clueless. Stop.
Well, my question
is that you
this
don't
individual,
know.
I don't think it's fair that we superimpose anything or off based off an assumption because someone only gives you half of the variables. Like, I could never make an assumption about you. I don't know anything about you. I'm a first-time caller. It would be wrong for me to say that
you don't
have this and that. I don't even know you. I don't know anything about you.
If you don't know anything about looking for a job as a programmer, then you just need to be quiet and listen to someone who does because the bottom line is that you said he is a programmer and he was looking for a job for a year and it was only after a year at the community college that he was able to get one. I'm sitting here telling you that there was one problem in there and you stated it when you first opened your mouth, C++. Yeah, that was the problem.
And like I say, I don't know all the situations.
Okay. Brother, I've already explained it to you, and respectfully, I'd appreciate it if you would stop saying you don't know. That's a feminine trait when a man is wrong and he keeps trying to keep on talking, but he doesn't say anything new. He just keeps saying, well, you're not right. I don't know. How can we say that? You don't know. All males raised by females, this is what being
trait.
A feminist does to them. A man is supposed to say, you know what, he's right.
Okay, no
and then he's
problem.
Supposed to stop talking.
I will take that. Now, I don't know, like I said, I don't know the whole situation with you, but I would like for you, and my friend is sitting here who told me I should give you a call. I would like for you to make give me the synopsis about me over the phone at this time, and she's going to let me know if you're absolutely correct, sir.
Well, I'm not going to ask her opinion of whether or not I'm correct, so...
No.
Right,
I would like for you to tell me about me
started,
over the
concerned.
Phone while she's here.
Okay, right there, I'm not concerned already. I'm not here to meet her I'm not here to meet her qualifications.
No, it's not her qualifications. I'm asking you respectfully.
You've already stated that it is.
No, because, see, you're making assumptions about an individual that you don't know. So since you do not know me, I would like for you to make the assumptions
you
about
are wasting
me.
You are wasting our time right now.
Are you backing down from the challenge, sir?
No, I'm about to disconnect your call.
And I see right now that you're unqualified. Thank you very much, sir.
Wow.
I let him keep. I didn't embarrass him. Now, people are saying I embarrassed him. I didn't embarrass him. He embarrassed himself. I don't know. I don't know. When you start doing that, what you're really doing is you're stalling for time. And he didn't have an answer when it was put to him. He didn't want to admit, you know what? I was just wrong. So he just kept talking because he believed he could stall for time. As you all have seen when I video shake people, even the ones who are stupid enough to try to respond, they don't respond to what I said. They just try to keep talking, see if they can stall for time. Let me stall for time. Let me keep talking, because if I don't say anything, people will realize that I don't know what I'm talking about. And the more they talk, people realize you don't know what you're talking about. I'm not here to meet his qualifications, his friend, or anything else. Buddy, you called me asking for information. I did not call you. I will never call you asking for information. You are the one with a degree. You are the one trying to get a degree in psychology. Sorry, you don't actually have one. You're trying to get one in sociology and just now realize that it's worthless. You're working as a corrections officer. You're getting a degree in sociology. Two dead ends. But you want us to believe somewhere in there is a plan. And what I told you is the truth that nobody told you before. You don't actually have a plan. You don't actually have a clue. You don't actually have anything. Nothing at all. But you didn't want somebody to tell you that. And he opened up his mouth and proved it. Brothers, understand something. Businesses do not remain successful. Businesses do not remain successful with a president, a founder, a CEO, a leader who refuses to admit quickly that he is wrong and cuts his losses quickly. A leader who is determined that I'm just going to keep talking and I'm going to be right. That's not a leader. That's a zealot. Look it up. Caller from the 216, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Name's Herb, Cleveland, Ohio. This is my second time calling in.
What's on your mind, brother?
I was listening to this gentleman, and like I said, he called you. You didn't call him. And then he wants to know how to get a better job, but then he's going to qualify for everybody else. Bad mistake on his part. When you were talking about building, myself and five other brothers, we got together. We're implementing Dr. Anderson's program. We want to pull it through. So what we did was form a business association of our own. Two
Very
of my
good.
Business owners. And what we decided was to do this. So if you're serious, told each brother, I said, you got to put $1,000 down, and you're going to pay $100 a month. If you're serious and you got some money in it, you're going to stay and do something. If you're not, if you're going to talk, we can't use you. So we're getting ready to get three more in, and we decided that we're going to do some fundraising, and we're going to fundraise and use things to accumulate the money, and then we have some ideas like the movie Shark Tank. That's Shark Tank. We want to sit there and talk to people who are serious about running business, and we'll have the money and the seed money to help them. But they got to have the
couple
things
of things
to do.
Here. What you said, first of all, remember what I said at the beginning of the program, that the reason that people stray off into religion and sociology and opinion and all that stuff is because they don't want to talk economics, because economics will tell you what's real and what isn't. And did you notice what you said? That before we get started with anybody, they got to put some money on the table. And that way we know that that is your way of separating the talkers from the takers. And that is exactly the way you do it. That is exactly how you do it. Before we even have a conversation, I want to know who's got money to put in the game, because I can do hypotheticals all day. I would rather have, if I'm going forward in business, I need to know the qualifications of the person who wants me to go into business with them. So thank you very much for validating that for me. Go ahead.
Yes, and the thing is, like I said, we're going to do fundraising, and once we get that done, then we can move forward. The other thing that, like you said, most people, as I found out, are pretty much afraid to be in the business for themselves because it's a responsibility. And today is the right time to do this. It's not too late. And it's just a frame of reference. In the 40s and 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s, we had businesses. And I'm 62 years old. And I remember those days. I lived in the South when it was segregated. And my family's always been involved in business. And we always had that entrepreneur spirit. And the thing is, there's a lot of advantages to owning a business, but you got to have the guts and the fortitude to want to stay in business. And, again, like you said, we don't have to run a social program. You get the right people in to help you with your business. If you get the people who come in late and don't have that responsibility, your business goes down. So you got to have serious people, and you got to really look at who you are putting in place to help you. And that's the problem that most blacks have. They want to be social workers to people who are not don't have the acumen to want to learn or have the – I should say the comradeship, where if I'm hiring you, it's for your benefit, and, you know, it's a win-win situation for both of us.
Yeah, too often black people want to engage in endeavors that do not have a win-loss ratio. That was what he was saying. Well, if you just personally want to pursue something, I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to get a degree just to make money. In my world, if it don't make dollars, it don't make sense, S-E-N-S-E. So you lose me. As soon as you curve a conversation to, well, I'm just doing this for fun, man, go play. You want to have fun, go play volleyball. Go play kickball. I play big bank, take little bank. And it's not fun for me unless I'm winning. That's just the bottom line. It's not fun for me if my bank is going down. I'm not trying to have it. So when somebody comes to this place where we talk about black empowerment and then starts discussing, trying to discuss that there is something that they're pursuing that is not economic based, after the whole first half hour of this broadcast, I explained that it's all about the money. And then he goes off and says that you've already lost me right then, right there. You've already lost me.
Correct. Well, the thing is, too, like I said, some of these guys, I've been listening to different broadcasts. And I've seen different characters, and I won't mention names because it's not important. But yours is one I listen to because it is more positive. It's about results. And I prefer to hear results than to be hearing about somebody talking about rocks in Egypt or hiding about spirituality or when they use religion as a crutch. Like we said, I've told people before, too. Even my wife even heard me say, I said, we failed in every category. We have failed. Everything. Everything that Francis Crest Wellstein said, Lily Fuller said in those areas, we fail. And like I said, the main thing is when it comes to economics, everybody shut up. But like we said, the Asians, the Latinos, and everybody else is using economic prosperity. Their children are not unemployed. Their children are doing very well, and because they have an environment, again, where families come together, and that's the thing that we also lack, too, is family togetherness, that when you want, I've seen some family members don't even want their other members to be successful, and that's crazy, that's insane, but they have that attitude that they don't want even family members to be successful, and sometimes I tell people, like now, I said, well, if you got a family member that's not helping you, cut them loose, find the people that will help you. Quit wasting your time and spilling your wheels on people who really are going to hold you back or keep you from reaching your goal. Because once you become successful, then everybody shows up. It's like the little red hand syndrome. They won't help you with the foundation. They won't help you with you know, nurturing a business, but they all want to come to the banquet table to eat. You understand what I'm saying? So they don't want to do anything. So if you do it yourself and you become successful, then everybody wants, everybody's reaching out. They don't understand the pain and suffering that you went through. So therefore, I tell people now, I said, if we, I'm tired of hearing what we don't do. Dr. Claude Anderson, John Henry Clark, Dr. Ben, all of them have laid the pathway. The pathway is already there. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. All we need is good people to step forward, follow the direction, and we'll be successful.
Thank you very much for joining us, brother. And please do give us a call again.
All right, thank you very much. Enjoy talking. Take care.
You know what, Jason?
Yes.
He's absolutely correct. You know, people will support you as long as it doesn't cost them anything. And to test that, say you're about to open up a business. Call 10 of your best friends and ask them for $100 and see how quickly they start making excuses. Or they might just hang up in your face. You might get disconnected. We as black people, we don't have any consistency in anything meaningful. We don't. And it's absolutely correct. We do not want anybody else doing better than ourselves. And we don't even like each other enough to go into business with one another because everybody wants to be the boss. So
everybody wants to get the money without working.
Yes. And that's them saying that they want to be the boss. I want to regulate who does what, who does all this hard work. I'm going to be the boss. We don't know how to delegate things. We don't even know how to work together to make something, you know, to accomplish something great.
Because for us, everything about, as with the first caller, is about ego for us. He called the place to talk about capitalism and economics and empowerment. And the first thing he went to is, okay, let's take these numbers and that pesky little empowerment off the table. Let's see if we can discuss something where I can't lose. And the problem is that empowerment is a game where you can lose. And if you are scared and afraid, you lose before you even make contact. We're trying to figure out some way that we can get a win with absolutely no skin in the game. How can I win by remote control? And nobody wins by remote control. There are no remote control athletes on the field of the Super Bowl. No remote control athletes in the Olympics. And we're trying to figure out how do we get a win with no work, no effort, no sacrifice, no anything. It doesn't work that way. It has never been that way. Not now, not ever. But we're steadily trying to get that. And that's why most black businesses fail, because that's the definition of a hustle. A hustle is where you go in by hook or by crook. Empowerment is where you become the most powerful player in the game. That's the difference. And that's why he didn't want to discuss that. He does not want to, they don't want to discuss a situation where they could lose. And being an adult means managing your risks. That's what being an adult is. When you look at your risks and then manage them. Not when you look at risk and say, okay, how? Give me a game that has no risks. Michael Jordan is the greatest of all time. Why? Because he saw the risks and overcame them. Not because he said, oh, basketball is too tough. Let me try ping pong. Ping pong is too fast. Let me try horseshoes. Yeah, that's a lot better. Horseshoes right there. I'm big. I'm tall. I got a good aim. Horseshoes it is. He went straight for the toughest. He practiced harder than anybody else. Our people don't want to do that. We don't want to win like that. We want rewards, but we don't want a win. And that's why we're happy with losing, because you can get rewards as a loser, too. You can get crumbs flicked off the table. That's what losers get.
And you know what? When we think about religion, we have subscribed to let go and let God. You know, be thankful for what you have and for what you don't have, and pray. We're taught to, you know, you know, we went after something that wasn't the right thing for you. He has something better planned for you. So you're sitting around waiting for the better plan. Are we tithing because we're going to get something tenfold, but then they turn around and say, prosperity is not money. You know, so it's all kind of confusions that hold us back, because it's my opinion that a church with a large congregation of people, the only place that people go to on Sundays, should absolutely be a think tank.
You know, that what you just said right there, our churches ought to be think tanks. But you know, that's what the white churches are.
Yeah.
Cornerstone Baptist Church, John Hagee's church out there in San Antonio, Texas, that the wrestler Shawn Michaels and a few other wrestlers actually are members of, that's a damn political action organization. Please. That's a think tank. That's what they do. We as black folk have the nerve to allow a pastor to set up a church in our neighborhood, and it does no thinking, no tanking, no, definitely no think tank. It doesn't do anything for us. It should be impossible for you to set up a church in the black neighborhood that is not serving the black interest. It should be impossible. Other groups of people would never allow that. Never. You can set up a mosque. The Muslims at your mosque are going to want to know what you are doing for the people. But, and remember what we said before, black folk, hey, playing is a win for us. Hell, not even playing. Showing up to watch. Hell, not even showing up to watch. Just saying you showed up to watch. That's a win, far as we're concerned. That's a win.
I think religion is something that we say we are so that, you know, we sound right and that we fit in with the masses. It's not nothing that we practice. We're not our brother's keeper. We don't feed one another. We don't help each other. We don't do any of that stuff. But, oh, yeah, I'm a Christian. Oh, yeah. We don't do all that stuff. It just sounds good. And we hope that nobody sees us sinning like the people that they're calling sinners. Nobody really believes that, because if they did, this world would not be like it is. And we were taught by somebody that doesn't mean that it's right and exact, and it has not gotten us anywhere. We go in every Sunday and listen to this man show. This repetition, you know, we're supposed to be children in Christ when we ever grow up. We keep hearing the same thing over and over and over about the afterlife. It's just a temporary release, like taking a drink, getting high. But after that high is gone out, we still have that problem. After we come out of those services on Sunday, that message has not given us a resolve. We still have that problem. But we keep on going back because for some strange reason, we need that.
Because church is the only place that you can win even if you lose. It's the only place that tells you that you can win even if you die. It is the only place that tells you that dying can be a victory. Can you possibly make it easy for somebody? The only thing in this world that is guaranteed death, and this is the only thing that guarantees everybody that you can win. No wonder we love it so much. So we can take another couple of phone calls here. Caller from 757, you're live with the Black Channel.
Just listening.
Okay, we'll go ahead and put him back on hold then. Caller from 215, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hello.
Hi, you're on with the Black Channel.
Oh, how you doing, TBA? My name is Jennifer. I listened to your show, and I was just listening, and it just had me really think about the whole church thing. I was like, it's like really, really deep thinking. All that energy going in church, they should like try to do some business building, but you don't see any churches like really trying to organize and help people get out of bad situations. So I was just really thinking about what you said. And
do people understand
the reason why I call,
do people understand that before you get to that, do people understand that their religion has failed them? That not that their religion, religion as an institution, religion has failed us. Do you think that people understand that?
No, I don't think they understand, because when it, from their mindset, like when they go to church, it makes them like feel, it's like an emotional therapy for what they're going through in life. So they feel good after the church service, so they feel like it's done something, not realizing like you're still going through these problems and it's not like a long-term solution. You know what I mean? Like, so I guess like to them it's like, or it's doing something for them, but they're not looking ahead that it's not really, it's not giving them any kind of like long-term success in their lives in terms of, you know, repairing their family or, you know, trying to find a way to make money, you know, that's not going to be like self-defeating.
I mean, but how can you lose though? Because you can pray, for example, for your son to get off drugs. If you pray and he does get off drugs, then the Lord has answered your prayers. If you pray and he does not get off drugs, that's okay too, because you've turned him over to Jesus.
Right.
So you can't, how comforting is that? I can't possibly lose.
Right. Yeah, I thought about this. I kind of figured, this is my own personal experience and opinion. I used to be into, like, religion, and that shit is cool until, like, real life hits you, and it is not cool anymore. And then all the prayer and nobody comes to help you, and it's just like, okay. So when I really thought about it, like, what got me out of my situations was, like, me. I had prayer, but it's just like, it's like I had to do stuff. Like, I had to move. I had to physically move and get myself out of, like, real bad situations. So I don't know. I guess it's, like, the power of the mind. Like, I came away with my situation, like, it's not about so much, like, religion per se. It's more about, like, what I believe to be true on my solutions of, get, you know, like, what solution-oriented, like, how do I get out of my situation? Like, what is going to help me? And people weren't there to help me. Like, family and friends weren't there to help me. I had to, like, physically get myself out of situations, and that took a lot of gusto, so you know, that kind of, like, ruined my whole idea of just, like, getting into church again. So that's just, like, my personal experience. I can't really speak for other people. You know, I don't want to, like, tear anyone's faith or anything like that, but...
Well, no, but your experience is everyone else's experience. That's the problem. Your experience is everyone else's experience. Black people have not progressed socioeconomically because of praying. I'm sorry to tell people that. I mean, that's not the magic bullet that's done it. If that were, we would be the richest, most successful, most powerful, most prosperous people on earth. But we're not. And if you right. take a look at our home structures, at least our homes should be the most unified, well-organized, you know, places on the planet. But our daughters are the biggest slut. Our sons are the biggest deadbeats. So what does that tell you? That tells you that even inside the home, if your religion hadn't failed you, then why is it that your group is at the bottom of all its moral and social conditions also, if your religion hasn't failed you? Now, that's got nothing to do with money right there. Why is
right.
it that you're failing at this too?
Right. That's true. I don't think people really think outside the moment. They're kind of like in the moment. They're not like thinking like long-term planning and, you know, taking some time out of the day and really think about, like, you know, like, is everything that I'm doing working out for me? You know, just like being insightful, you know, for themselves and their families. And I just think it's a different way of thinking that needs to be approached to the whole religion and just life in general as far as, like, the community. Just, like, we need a new paradigm of thinking.
Well, that's hard to do when people are afraid. And all I have to do is offer them religion and say, okay, you've won before you even started. When you're dealing with a group of people who are afraid, it's very easy to hand them a religion. It's very easy to say, turn it over to the politicians, turn it over to the schools, turn it over to the church, turn it over to TV, turn it over to anything except you. That's the only thing that they don't want to discuss is take care of it themselves.
Well, that's like personal responsibility. Like, it's like one thing I noticed, TBA too, it's not even just like the black community. Most people seem like they have like a hard time growing up. You know, like they have a hard time accepting adulthood, like just being mature and accepting, like, you know, like their personal having personal responsibility. Like, if I do something wrong and I messed up, like, you know what I mean, taking it and just, like, learning from it and trying to, like, build something, from what happened or whatever. Like, people just have a hard time, like, I think, psychically trying to, like, grow up in their mind. Like, they want to be cared for. I think it's, like, that dependency that's, like, really ruining, if you want to say, like, I want to say the most part of the nation, but definitely Black community.
Well, the nation I'm not so much concerned about, to be totally honest with you. Black people, however, I'm very concerned about, because we are in the gravest situation of everybody. Everybody else is doing fine. It's us who are the only people in America right now who are staring down the barrel of extinction, and we are doing everything except facing the facts of how we got here. That's the only thing that we are refusing to do. And what in the hell do we have to show for all that denial? I'll let you have the word, sister.
Oh, okay. TBA, real quick, like, I kind of called, too, on something else. I had watched your video on, like, a tribute to Michael Jackson, and, like, it made me tear up. Like, I really felt, like, emotional. Like, I really think you gave dignity to Michael Jackson, like, the late, you know, Michael Jackson, King of Pop. And I felt some type of way because I remember when he died and at work, like, nobody was taking up for him. Like, I was, like, the only one in my cubicle. I'm like, let's take up for Michael Jackson. I just got mad because they're, like, my white coworkers, they would just, like, slander him. Like, you know, just names, like, oh, he's a PD. And I'm just, like, mad. Like, I'm the only one trying to stick up for Michael Jackson. And I could tell, like, even my Black supervisor, she would look at me. They all looking at me like, oh, you know, Jen, like, you know, talk up for us. But I'm like, you're my supervisor. Like, get in this conversation, and we're all talking about this at the job. It was kind of heated, and I was just mad. I felt, like, so alone. And then I finally saw your YouTube video, and it made me tear up. You gave him, like, such dignity, like, he's a human being. Like, I feel like they try to take away just the fact that he was a human being, you know, when he, you know, his accomplishments, and when he died, like, the white media just really try to strip him like he's nothing. And I just wanted to give you gratitude. Like, I just wanted to thank you for that because that really made me, like.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for your comments there. A TD, I'm not really sure what you mean by that.
I'm sorry?
At the risk of making myself sound out of the loop, you said that they said he was a TD?
They said he was a pedophile, PD, short term.
Oh, okay. Okay,
yeah, they were making names. Say, they were mocking him.
TD, I was about to say TD. They invented something new here. Look, okay.
No, I'm sorry, I meant to say I was trying to say PD, like, you know, short for pedophile, but they were just, like, just talking about them, like, really bad.
Okay, let's be clear on a couple of things here. Other than chase white women, there's only one difference between Michael Jackson and Muhammad Ali. One died and the other one didn't. That's the only difference. But they were doing the exact same thing about Muhammad Ali.
Oh,
you
wow.
The media was not a friend of Muhammad Ali, and neither white folk either, by the way. Can we just say that one time? White people were not a friend of Muhammad Ali when he was alive. I mean, well, he's alive when he was champ during the Vietnam War. You go check and see what some of the white folk were saying about him and what the newspapers were saying about him. That's one of the few things they may have gotten semi-right in that movie, Ali, even though I didn't see the whole thing. They didn't have have anything kind to say about great black men or black women from there. They don't have anything kind to say about them. They don't have anything kind to say about Denzel Washington. He just hasn't done anything they can rip him for because nobody has made an allegation against him, but the man practically had to be a hermit for it. All he can do is go act his movies and go hide out his house. That's the only reason why it didn't happen. Same thing for Jim Brown. Black men who have stood up and identified themselves as black men, even Michael being late to the game, but then again, he kind of wasn't, and once he was in and out, that's what being a Jehovah's Witness will do to you. But that man didn't do that. Baby, let me tell you something. How old are you, Jennifer?
Oh, I'm 30.
Okay, I'm 37, seven years older than you. But Mona was there, and she remembers when Thriller came out. She remembers the start of MTV. And Gladys Knight will bear witness that the president of MTV at that time, because it wasn't a part of Viacom, said he would never have a black person on that network. Oh, we get to say that. We forget to include that 20 years later. We don't like to talk about that 25 years later. We don't want to admit that 30 years later, do we? But we need to remember that that was what the president of MTV said. And nobody wants to recall that. And then came a little skinny fellow named Michael Jackson, who was just, Thriller was just so undeniable that MTV could not ignore it. And they played it every 10 damn minutes. Guess what? It was so good that every 10 minutes wasn't enough. It was a masterpiece of music, and a black man had done it. And it took, what, 10 years after Elvis Presley was dead, and they were talking about the king of rock and roll, Michael Jackson destroyed Elvis, every record Elvis Presley had ever made, every statue that he had ever set, Michael destroyed it within 2 years. Not a lifetime. One album did it in 2 years. You think they were happy to do that? Hell no. This is why I told you all, y'all need to go back because you're 7 years younger than me. Have you ever seen Michael Jackson's video, Leave Me Alone?
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely.
That's why I say for those of you who've never heard that song before, listen to the song itself. You can go to YouTube and do it, and then go watch the video for Leave Me Alone. Because that tells you what the media was saying about him when he, at the height of his popularity. This was long before they started talking about those children. Long before that. They were talking about him and the llama and the monkeys and the hyperbaric chamber and Liz Taylor. They had been saying all kinds of crazy stuff about him way before those children ever came along. Way before that. So they can't say that that was something new. Oh, we loved him till the kids. No. You were ripping this man from the start. They were never a friend of his, and they were never a friend of Ali, never a friend of Jim Brown. The only reason they talk about those men glowingly today is because you couldn't trust them. But when at the height of their popularity, you didn't have no love for them. Muhammad Ali only became the greatest after Mike Tyson. When you had black champion after black champion after black champion, and it was very clear this wasn't going to stop. All of a sudden, you love Ali. But that was because Ali got on Arsenio's program and said that Tyson was better than him in his prime. Ain't going nowhere. We are not going to let you put an icon in the 20th, at the end of the 20th century. You ain't doing that. So all the focus goes back on Ali now. And guess what? You stop talking about Tyson and Holyfield and Lennox Lewis. You get the point now?
Yeah.
That's how you kill a momentum by telling people that their greatest days are behind them. Those people did not love Michael Jackson. And your white coworkers, they have been waiting decades to do that. Not years, decades. Don't believe me? Ask O.J. Simpson if they'll wait. So you were, what, 10 years old when O.J. got put on trial?
Yeah, give or take.
Mona will tell you she lives in California. White folk were furious. Furious. Yeah. Negroes were scared to go to school and go to their jobs. White were furious. O.J. Simpson got acquitted. They were mad as hell. I'm not talking about the media. I'm talking about the folk walking down the street. They were cutting us off in traffic. They were cutting us off in the grocery store with their buggies. They were talking all reckless at your job. They were reckless at my college. And they waited 10 long years to get him. And remember, after the trial was over, they first were talking about O.J. Simpson was caught stealing cable. Are you serious? That was a national headline. I'm not joking. Yeah. Mona, is that the truth? Was that not a national headline?
Yes, it was.
O.J. Simpson caught stealing cable because he had a bootloader. Look it up. But that was a headline. Then about his navigator, he had an accident or something like that. I mean, they were talking about he could get 5 to 10 years and $100,000 fine. I'm like, seriously, this is a headline? You are really giving a breaking news headline on O.J. Simpson caught with a bootloader and talking about how much time he could do. Bill Clinton sitting there with Monica Lewinsky, and you're telling us how much time O.J. Simpson could do for a bootloader. Ma'am, they were never happy about that. They were never okay. They were never all right. And as young people, they just smiled and smiled and smiled, because young people, it's all about putting the wool over the eyes of the next generation. We're not like that. We're nothing like that. We're not like that. Michael Jackson died, and you saw that young folk your age, because you're 30 now, so you were what, 27? 26?
Yeah, that's about right.
Okay, so young people 20 years old acting like the white folk in their 40s, with them telling you that we're not like them, we're not like them, we're not like them. Trayvon Martin should have taught you that. Oh, we're nothing like our parents were, nothing like them at all. Jordan Russell Davis, we're nothing like our parents, nothing like them at all. Only took one child for them to show you that, yeah, right. Young folk better wake up and realize that your parents were foolish. Your parents were willing to die to get that pat on the head from the dominant culture. I'm telling you, don't be so foolish. They were never They were never friends of any prominent black person who did not bow and kiss the ring. Michael had a lot of white fans, but he never kissed white folks' asses. He never did that. Could he have done a lot of stuff better? Well, yeah, he could have done a lot of things better. But understand, getting Lisa Marie Presley was about proving something to himself. And let me tell you, and Mona bear this witness, and anybody else will, they were bouncing off the damn walls when he took up with Lisa Marie Presley. Don't you know that that is literally the equivalent of Ramses killing the king and taking his daughter? That was literally it. Michael said, let me show you what I think of Elvis Presley, just in case you don't know that I'm the man. Because you're challenging my manhood and saying I'm gay. Remember all that mess? That's what they were saying when Thriller came out. He's gay. Well, he said, let me show you who don't think I'm gay. Come here, Lisa. Why don't you tell them all about how gay I am right quick? Get your little ass out here. Ma'am, they were not thrilled about that. He rubbed that in their faces. You ain't got to call me the king of rock and roll. She calls me the king of rock and roll. You ain't got to call me that. All of a sudden, the media didn't want to talk about Lisa Marie Presley anymore. All of a sudden, they wanted to talk about Priscilla, don't want to talk about Lisa Marie anymore. I wonder why. Man, they were never happy about all those little jabs, all those little slights, all those insults. They never liked any of that. And they waited 20, 30 damn years for this man to die, because they were thinking he was going to die back in the 80s. Oh, he's sick. The hyperbaric chamber thing. Oh, he's medical attention. He got in the damn thing as a joke. National Enquirer took a picture. Michael Jackson at his door. 30 years later, the man's on my reunion tour. Been taking drugs for 30 years. Ain't fell over yet. They were doing a death watch on. As soon as Thriller came out, they started talking about this man dying. Dying. Not having a flop, but dying. Ain't nobody talking about Justin Bieber dying. He may get arrested, he may do jail time. Nobody's talking about him dying. From the moment that Thriller hit number one and wasn't coming back down, they started talking about that man dying.
I think they
don't ever fool yourself into thinking that they were friends of Michael Jackson. They never, 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 ever were. And the only reason they talk about Barack Obama so glowingly today is because he's never said anything in favor of his people. If he ever did, watch it switch. Watch switch like nothing. Like it's nothing. Don't ever expect the oppressor class to change. That's not going to happen. What we have to do is become powerful enough so that what they want to do does not affect us. But, ma'am, that's nothing new. That was nothing new. Jack Johnson will tell you that one, with all the white women that he roused with. They were no friends of Jack Johnson. Not when he was alive, not when he was dead. Only now. Oh, the first black heavyweight champion. Y'all weren't talking like this about him then.
Mm. I think that, I think black people need to understand that it's never going to change. I think they hope that it's going to change and that, oh, master's not going to hurt and kill us because he took care of us for hundreds of years. And I think that's far from the truth. I think slowly but methodically they want to, you know, like genocide the black race in America. And I think until people, like, wake up to, you know, what's happening, like, they're not going to really, you know, force themselves to fight back. Like, I just think that's what the mindset is.
Well, they're just depending on you to sit there and fry in the skillet like a frog. That's what they're waiting for.
Yeah. Like, I went to
you know, I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
You know what, I think that's why it's, been on surge of these new movies, Son of God, Noah. They know that religion is losing its power. And they're coming out with all these, you know, movies. Religion does not produce leaders or thinkers. And it actually produces followers and people that are not going to fight.
Well, you know what, I will only slightly disagree with that. Religion does produce leaders depending on how it's taught to you. Religion can either be used to teach you that you are like the children of Israel leaving Egypt, or religion can teach you that you are the children of Israel in captivity. Religion can teach you that you are the children of Israel building Jerusalem and at the apex of your power. Or it can teach that your people, that religion can teach you that you and your people are the children of Israel lost in the wilderness.
And you're absolutely,
on how it's given to.
You're absolutely correct, Jason, but even though people will say those two things out of their mouth, they will say that we are the children of Israel, but then they'll say we're cursed. So if you don't believe it and act on it, you believe we're cursed, and we're supposed to get everything that we're getting is because we did not obey, and we're doomed forever. And that's what the majority of people think, even though they say we are the children of Israel.
Well, but that's because they are seeing themselves through the eyes of the dominant culture. So their perspective of the religion takes into account the eyes of the dominant culture. That's what it does. So they are projecting through the religion onto themselves how they see themselves already. They've gone to the religion to reinforce what they think about themselves. If you teach your children that they're nobody's step and fetch it, nobody's footstool, they behave that way, they respond that way. If you didn't bother to teach them that, they go to the religion and get it to reinforce what you have taught them to already believe.
Yes.
That's what they end up doing. Well, Jennifer, I want to welcome you to the Black Channel, and thank you very much for checking in with us this evening. And please do call us again.
Thank you. Keep doing what you're doing, TV.
They were never friends of Michael Jackson, never friends of any of us. It's amazing how time and history, they've tried to erase that, but they were never friends of any of us, not at any time. Caller from 313, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Greetings. This is Dindu from Detroit.
What's on your mind, brother?
I was just calling to reflect on the wisdom of our ancestors, Dr. John Henry Clark, you know, Claude Anderson, Booker T. Washington, all of those people, and how their teachings were omitted from future generations. And it seems like now our culture went from, you know, being workers and highly praising education. It might have been a little bit misguided back then, but still it was there. Now, if you get education, it's like you're acting like you're white. You know, we focus on things like symptoms instead of causes. You know, and I wholeheartedly know, because I don't use the word believe, because that implies that you don't know, that most of us are just confused. We're so confused about racism, white supremacy. And when you speak to someone who is confused, you get nowhere. You know, they don't see the logic in what you're talking about because they're so irrational.
Well, I mean, I don't really think it's that they're confused. I think it is that they are cowardly. We use confused as a nice diplomatic euphemism, but the truth is most black people are cowardly, and that even when you show them undeniable proof, Rodney King, Trayvon Martin, Paula Deen, it doesn't get any clearer than that, and they are still saying the same thing. He's not confused. He's scared. He's afraid. Because now what you're telling him is, okay, time to get up and face him. Man, look here. She may have meant that differently than the way you talking about, man. Well, you know, maybe Rodney King was doing something he shouldn't have been doing. And police said he was speeding, you know. Trayvon shouldn't have been in that neighborhood, no way, man. It's, even if he lived there, he shouldn't have been out there late. They are reflecting and projecting onto themselves everything that they feel already. So it's nice to see they're confused, but from my perspective, that's not the hallmarks of confusion. When you get the same answer no matter what question you ask them, that person, at some point we have to validate that the person's not confused. He knows it as well as we do. His reaction is different because you and I are ready to get up and do something, and he's not trying to do anything about it. He's scared of what that will mean.
Absolutely, and I totally agree with that, you know, and I would add on to that. Why I use the word confused is because upon me realizing what racism was, racism, white supremacy was, and what it is not, I started to see and get the same answers from black folks about what it was. Oh, well, that's when white people don't like black people. I'm like, okay, so now we can't even really talk because you're unqualified to have this conversation. And you might be more so biased, like most people would be, on your position because you've internalized what you think is true. Just like religion, things about racism, white supremacy, why we are at the bottom, everything, you know. So I would add that on to that, but I totally agree with what you said. We are afraid.
And that's why we have all these shields. Like I said, we don't realize that our religion has failed us, our politics have failed us, our schools have failed us. We don't realize those things have failed because if you are a person who demands results, well, it takes courage to demand results. And when you are totally lacking courage, that's exactly what happens. Events happen to you, but you never steer events because it's courage to steer events. We'll just outsource it to somebody else and see if they can take care of it for us. That's why we end up here. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
Well, it's just, we spoke about it, so black first, brother.
Black first. Thank you very much for checking in with us, brother. We got another call here from 313 area code. They've been waiting for a while. Let me get them up right quick. Caller from 313, you're on Live Black Channel. Okay, caller from 313 is watching Tiny Toons. Did we interrupt you? Okay, caller from 313 is stuck on their cable TV. Caller from 347, you're live with the Black Channel. Okay, they're doing this now, really?
I'm sorry, I was just listening.
Okay, well, just say you're just listening then. Sometimes I think they're over there doing something while they say they're listening, Mona. Huh. Really? You know, there's a place for being diplomatic, Mona. There really is. But we as black folk, what I do is I demand that things have to be black and white. And I don't just mean from a racial standpoint. I mean that we can't have excuses anymore. That we keep coming up with all these little catchphrases and all these little words that keep letting people off the hook. And we do that for the purposes of making them feel better about their cowardice as opposed to demanding that they change. And you can't get anything fixed when you keep letting people off the hook, letting people off the hook, letting people off the hook. That's not going to fix anything when you keep doing that. That's the problem, is it's not going to fix anything.
You know what? In regards to religion, there are many people that have questions, many people that see that something is not right. However, religion teaches you not to question, not to cause waves, because if you do, you're condemned to this lake of fire, and they really believe that there's this lake of fire. And thing is, how do we expect the oppressor's religion to be beneficial for us? And people tell me, well, when I ask Christians questions, Yeah, Mona, you're right. I thought of that too. They don't even want to answer you because they think they're going to slake a fire. Yeah, you got a good point, Mona. Yeah, I thought about that before too. And they still continue to do something that doesn't work. Religion gives you hope. Money gives you results. Religion teaches you that you're going to get some type of reward for the afterlife. Money teaches you that you can create your own heaven and hell here. Whether you have money or the lack of money is going to determine whether you be in hell or you be in heaven. And we refuse to take it upon ourselves to create our own healthy environments. So religion is our crutch. Jesus got beat up, so I should get beat up too. Jesus is in the house, so you know, what's a house? Use all these little cliches and we all this little nonsense and BS so that we don't have to do anything. We don't have to produce anything. We have to be held accountable for anything. And then we tithe. We tithe money that we don't even have. We tithe money we can't even pay our bills because we've been brainwashed in that concept. How much more could our tithings been, had we kept them? How better off would we have been if we keep those weekly tithes and use that money to build something, to open up a business? We even use tithing at the end of the year. Oh, Jason, I got my annual report for my tithing, and, you know, it said I contributed X amount of dollars. I contributed more than you, so I'm a better Christian than you. But in the same breath, we're both not doing good. So we fall for the okey-doke all across the board and really think that we're doing something.
And this is the reason why I love having this woman on. Religion gives you hope. Money gives you results. I have the most intelligent, most insightful group of black men anywhere on the planet listening to my broadcast, and I'm very proud to have that. And once again, as a reminder for everybody here, if you really want to change things, definitely let your friends, family, and everybody else know you found the haven of intelligent black thought. Here with people like me and Mona Lachey, because everybody else is out there spreading their nonsense. Isn't it time that somebody actually spread the truth for once? Can we actually have that for a change? Why don't you let them know instead of just sitting on it? Because if they can pass stupid Instagram and pass Mimi's sex video, isn't it time that we injected a little intelligence in there as well? Let your people know. Don't sit up here. Are you one of these people who's scared to show your intelligence? If you're not promoting us, and if you're not letting people know, hey, I'm listening to the Black Channel right now, are you really so sure that you're not one of those scared people? Are you really so sure of that? So I just wanted to remind you that if you have not done that, this is the time to be doing that. Let people know that they've got options. They've got alternatives. Everything doesn't have to be coonery and buffoonery. Things can be intelligent. I'm not a perfect messenger. But then again, I don't have to be. Brought, did you get the message is the question. Don't worry so much about the messenger. If you see anybody else out there bringing the message like this, let me know. Let me know, because I'll go ahead and start letting them get on. That'll be just fine for me. But until then, you found the haven of intelligent black thought. Caller from 910, welcome to the blackchannel.net radio. What's your name you're calling from?
Hi, Jason. This is Kayla. Am I on?
Yes, you're on.
Okay, I just like to make sure I get that. First of all, I wanted to say I called maybe a week or two ago, and I spoke with you. I'm not sure if you remember or not, but Okay. I just wanted to apologize to my friend that just called in a couple calls ago I wanted to share, you know, I've been listening to every broadcast since I called, and I really feel strongly about, you know, what you're doing and everything like that, and I wanted to, he was actually asking me, telling me about, you know, he wanted to start his own business and everything like that, and I was like, you know, there's this guy you've got to listen to, you know, he's very intelligent, you know, home of intelligent black conversation. And so he called in, and he really embarrassed himself and me. So I just wanted to apologize for him for that.
Well, he didn't embarrass you. He did embarrass himself. So. Here, adults are responsible for their own actions here, so I wouldn't worry about that.
Okay, well, I'll still continue to share. I'll continue to tell others about you. So.
Well, I appreciate that, Michaela. I thank you very much for checking in with us. And don't you yourself worry about it. In the future, though, like I say, I want you to recognize those kind of traits in people, because nobody is going to come up and tell you that they're on the wrong track. Nobody's going to do that. It's much later.
Mm-hmm.
Much, much later. Thank you very much for checking in with us, though, sister. Let me see if we can grab caller from 313. Oh, we got a lot of people calling from there. You're on live with the Black Channel.
Yeah, Detroit has always been very active in the black movement. Hey, Jason, let me ask you this. Since I discovered
let me find out. You have to tell us your name.
Yeah, Vaughn, man.
Hello, Vaughn, because even if I know it, they know who they listen to.
All right, man. Hey, since I discovered this unfiltered internet radio, and in particular with the Black Voice, I've come across a number of people who's speak on the same thing, and they also have given a list of books to read. When you mentioned Don Peebles, I knew I was in the right place because I heard that from somebody else. I got his book. They also mentioned David Walker's Appeal to Colored Citizens of the World and a few others. So my question to you, do you have a list of readings that I can get into and discover more complete thought of what's going on and what direction to go into?
Well, it depends on what stage a person is at before I recommend any books to them. If you are just at the beginning and don't know anything, then, of course, you have to start with Dr. Claude Anderson's Powernomics Trilogy. If you're a little bit further along and you understand that, I'll recommend you to Don. But to be totally honest with you, I don't really go much further beyond that. If you have a subscription to Black Enterprise and Fortune magazine, you should. Black Enterprise has not been pleasing me over the course of the last 12 months. So I'm never going to tell somebody to cancel their subscription to it. I will say that Black Enterprise has not been pleasing me in the course of the last 12 months. You got an issue talking about black women, and you got an issue talking about gays on the cover, not one about black men. But I'm a black man paying for a magazine that is not talking about me. So they kind of upset me with that. So I'm going to do as Anderson said and let them know I am displeased. I'm not going to just take my money to Forbes. But if this heats up, then I don't know. But I will give them an opportunity to correct these things. But based on the fact that they actually have cut down on the number of pages, they've like cut the number of pages in half, this recent issue of Black Enterprise magazine looks more like a comic book than a magazine. As far as the number of pages and the spine on it, not even they have really cut back on their number of pages. So I'm like, hey, if you want to sell a little bit of a magazine you got left, you need to start fixing that. But beyond that, brother, get up and go do. Stop the reading. We as black people, we sit up here and don't realize the education has failed us. You want intelligence, not education. You can only get intelligence from the gaining of knowledge. Knowledge is what you can apply. Not just having stat in your head. Get up and go do.
Everything so you recommend a trial and error then?
Everything I do here is about kicking people in the rump and getting them up to go do. You want to know the most powerful reading that you do? Let me give you an example. If you want to become a car dealer, the most powerful business reading that you can do is not Don Peebles or Claude Anderson. The most powerful reading that you can do is going to your state's Automotive Association licensing website and go read there. That's the most powerful reading you can do. Reading that will actually be applicable to what you're trying to do. I am very, very short on doing a whole bunch of reading books. I'm very, very long on what to do. I could care less if you didn't ever know who Don Peebles was. If you got as much money as him, you got the damn message. And you're probably better than most people because you got it without ever even having to read.
Yeah, I'm just saying. Well, I appreciate that, you know, like you're saying, trial and error, get on your own two feet and make that move. What's that phrase, the first 1,000 miles begins with the first step, something on those lines. So you got to move.
1,000 miles begins with a single step.
Exactly. So you got to move on. You got to move forward. Hey, thanks, man. I appreciate the information.
Thank you very much for joining us. So many people here in Mona, as a business owner, you know, you didn't, you know, start doing your business by reading a bunch of books about cosmetology. You got up, you did it, and said, hey, let me buy my own stuff or rent my own place. And off you went. It's not about gaining a bunch of academic knowledge. Where we fail as black people is we never move on into the area of actually doing. And the people who crack whips and lord over us are the ones who did. And it's really just that simple. Caller from 305, you're on live with the Black Channel. Caller from 305, last try. You're on live with the Black Channel. Caller from 305 is asleep.
Hello?
Oh, hello? I'm sorry. Did we wake you? I heard you snoring there for just a moment.
Hey, Black Furnace Station, man. This is Eric from 305, man.
Hello, Eric. That sleep apnea is kicking ass, ain't it?
No, man, I wasn't sleeping. Max, I was just so deep into the conversation, bro.
I heard you snoring. Okay, that's fine. You stopped snoring at just the right moment, too, because that other fella just keeps sitting there the whole time. So you're pretty good, man. You almost became the punchline of the evening. So you were damn lucky. What's on your mind, brother?
Yeah, Jason. The question I have for you tonight is, I was on your website. I mean. And I heard you saying something about, you know, that the past is constantly lying to us. So now that you know you started this talk show to let us know the truth. My question is, as us as black people, you know, as like a conscious community or, you know, having, you know, wanting to build economics, why haven't we ever got together and built an institution that actually does the same thing that the churches do, just with a different subject title, which is to better black people?
Because what happened was we started integrating. The chief tool of integration was the churches. They got a hold of the pastors. They have always had their entree and influence in the black community through the churches. That was all we had on the plantations. And they've been working the hell out of that ever since. There are very, very few things that really still link us to the plantations, but the church, unfortunately, is one. And by that, I mean it's connected to white society. Every black pastor is trying to get on white TV, trying to get in white magazines. And as long as they are able to do that, they got you. Because he's not going to say anything that will prevent them from putting them on his TV or magazines. So once they did that, our focus began being the church. And also, historically, the church has been where we congregated. Even on the plantations, they let us be religious. We never actually made a chamber of commerce or an academic fraternity like Skull and Bones, where we dealt these things outside of a church setting. All we had was the church. So this really new to black people in a lot of ways. This is new. We would make more progress if we just admit that it was new. But we don't. We act
that
like we've been
true.
Doing it all along. We can't fix it because nobody admits, hey, we don't really know what we're doing because this is new to us. And we would get so much more progress if we just concede that this is new. It's new. We don't know how to do this. And that's why Dr. Paul Anderson wrote his books, because we don't know. And Dr. John Henry Clark and Chancellor Williams, because we don't know. We tell ourselves that we do, but we really don't. That difference. So, brother, we are the first generation of black people who are actually going to get it started if we ever get to it, because we ain't done it yet. So that's the answer to your question. We've never done it.
No, I'm all in.
That guy called earlier today and said he got together with five other fellas. It's just that easy. Or should I say it's just that simple as far as complexity. Not complex. Get together with two or three other guys, guess what? We got an organization. Just the four of us. We're an organization. Just that simple. But we refuse to do even that. Now, let's bring some females into the conversation. Oh, man. Room full of black men.
With females, you know, loaded, old man. Go ahead.
You know what? I'm wondering if we actually realize that a so-called nonprofit organization makes $70 billion a year. They make $250 a week. So don't we understand that it's no longer about saving souls? It's strictly for profit. Because I talked to a pastor one day and I asked him, you know, why are we not getting better? And he told me that there's some kind of law that states that they cannot talk about politics or anything else inside the church structure. That's why they have to come on Blog Talk or certain different places, and then they're free to speak. And I thought that was a cop-out. Because I asked him, shouldn't the church be responsible for the community? And he said, no. But then off the record, he got in contact with me and said, yes. And then I listened to one of his broadcasts on Blog Talk Radio, and he stated that we should be doing more. So it's not for us. It's a profit. What are they doing with that money? How much money do you need to tell a partner to do right? Why do we have to come somewhere every week to do right and pay?
Right here in Shreveport, the two biggest churches that we have here own apartment complexes and a subdivision right here in Shreveport. We're not a huge city. Right here, they're doing that. White church has been doing that. The pastors who said they can't do anything for the community, that's because he's like, he gets in the way of me buying this Cadillac.
Exactly. I asked him what was tithes for, what were offerings for. He said tithes were for the church. And offerings was for, I don't know if I'm going to say this word right, benevolence. But because they don't get enough tithes, they can't do the benevolence part and hit the community. But you still make $7 billion a year, and you're a nonprofit organization. Nonprofit organizations don't make money.
I have never in my life met a black pastor, preacher, or reverend has a skill outside of being a pastor, preacher, or reverend. I never met somebody with a degree in mechanical engineering. I never met a computer science major. I never met anybody like that who had a pliable skill set of upper income skill set that was a pastor or a preacher in my entire life. And Mona, you're 54, and I doubt you've ever met that either.
I haven't. And they say that they're not supposed to work because they have this great message. That's their job, and they should be paid well. He told me, not only him, but maybe about six or seven, they're supposed to be paid well for this message.
But it's not supposed to fit the community in any way. Now, if you let somebody run game on you like that, that's just running game. That is running straight game. But we as black people, we like that kind of hucksterism. We
exactly.
Like game on us like that.
And I asked him a question, and when I asked him the question, I said, "You're Jesus." And I said, "Didn't your Jesus say that upon this rock I build my church?" And I asked him, they all stayed together, they all ate together, they all communed together, they all helped each other out. So he did not have an answer for my question. So he said, "Did I hear you say you're Jesus?" I said, "Yes." He said, "So you don't believe in Jesus?" I said, "No." He said, "Well, I tend not to talk to people that don't believe." I said, "Well, isn't your job to save souls?" And then he shut down. He didn't want to talk to me.
I'm very glad you said that. I don't talk to people who don't believe. But wait a minute. Wasn't that what Jesus told you to do?
Yeah.
I think what he meant to say, Mona, I think what he meant to tell you was, I don't talk to people who are not paying customers.
Well, what he thought I never read Bible. And I told him, I said, I read that Bible about 30 times, from the front to the back. He said, "Oh, you have? I haven't even gotten past Genesis." And I was like, what? I said, sir, you know what, that's a whole different topic, and I really could tear you up right now, but we're not even going to do that. And then in my mind, I'm thinking, how many people do you have in your congregation following you, and you've not gotten past Genesis? Please. But you're their leader. But I didn't say it.
Creflo Dollar and T.D. Jakes, don't move past the Ecclesiastes.
Okay. And we're not getting it. We're not getting it. Subscribe to this as moving forward.
As a people, we don't want to get it.
Same side, yeah.
We like the situation where these guys calling the tune makes us happy. We're comfortable. It's very comfortable for us to let them run our lives.
Yeah. How do we fix of our mouth, no weapons formed against us shall prosper, and we're getting tore up all around across the board. He will not put more on you that you can bear. And our babies are dying. Our men can't find jobs. Our society is raised by single mothers. Our men are incarcerated. We have no family unity. We have no black males out here in leadership roles. We have no businesses. We have nothing to fall back on. But, oh, no weapons formed against us shall prosper. I'm too blessed to be stressed. What are you blessed with?
Peace.
We don't have peace.
But with inner peace. And
we don't have inner peace. We don't have that. If we had inner peace, we would not be complaining, moaning, griping, any of that. We would just say it is what it is and just kick back. We're spinning our wheels and riding in robots and trying to go this and trying to do this. But like you said, we won't do black empowerment. We won't get together in black economics. We can't put a penny together and try to get ourselves out of this mess. We'll make excuse after excuse after excuse and then go pray. And God told me, God ain't told you nothing. You're not producing anything by believing this. It's gotten us nowhere. And I think that's why, because I am 53, the younger generation is not subscribing to religion because they see that it didn't work for their mama and daddy. It didn't work for their grandmothers. It didn't work for their grandmothers. This is not a viable tool that's going to propel us into being successful. So they're rebelling against it because people will say, well, we need to get back in the church. No, we don't. And although our youth know that it's not working, they don't know what to do without it. They don't know what to do to replace it because this is a whole new concept of not praying and not waiting on God. They don't know that next step. So it's important that we get more people to tune into the Black Channel so that they can hear the next step. Get your own. Provide for yourself. Stand up. Be a leader. Be accountable. Be responsible. Have pride in your race and your family. Give your children something to look forward to be proud of. Take that on as a religion. That's too hard. That requires work. That requires sacrifice. That requires discipline. That requires saying no. That requires I can't have all the Jordans and all those red bottoms because that doesn't mean anything. That requires I might have to stand alone. That requires that a whole lot of people are not going to like me because I might be looked upon as being uppity. I'm done.
Caller, I'll let you have the last word.
Yeah, you touched a lot of great points, Mona, and you're right. Like, that's the problem. I think that's one of the biggest problems we have in the black community is that accountability. Like, nobody wants to be accountable for the condition that we're in. So we keep making excuses after excuses. But you know what, Jason? I kind of have faith in the future, because if you really look at how things are, it has to reach an equilibrium somewhere. You get what I'm saying? So when that equilibrium gets reached, all hell is about to break loose.
Well, thank you very much for joining, brother. We appreciate your call.
All right.
I don't know what's happened. My voice is starting to try to go out on me for some reason, but I will persevere, or at least that's what I like to tell myself. Let's see. Okay. Caller from 212, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Oh, hello?
Hi.
Hi, this is Jasmine, and I'm from Queens.
This is Jasmine. Now I know who you are.
Okay. Okay, I did say I was going to call in earlier in regards to your Black female fitness motivation post.
Okay, because she said she wanted to call about this. What's on your mind?
Yes. Basically, I've been following the post since about December and whatnot. And I would say that I'm about 3 pounds away from my goal weight, and because I've been working out since I would say June or July of last year, and I'm just now actually seeing progress up until although I'm going to have to start going to the gym, because I'm not. Even when getting to my goal weight, I'm actually not going to have the body that I would like to have. But I'm realizing now that the closer I am getting to my goal weight, I'm kind of just all I can think about is, like, reaching down to that goal weight. And I remember when Jennifer Miranda was on your broadcast about a couple of months ago, she did mention something about basically thinking about what you're going to eat and exercising, like, all the time. And I just kind of wanted to know if that was that, like, a normal thing or something to be expected?
Yes, because as a person who's done that, the biggest lie that I've ever heard with weight loss or fitness is that you can do those things and not think about it. And that's a lie. It will become the most important thing of your day. It will become all-consuming. If I have a rule that if you can't tell me exactly how many calories you ate today, you're in trouble. And so get ready, because it becomes mentally hard, but that's where you're going.
Okay.
Depending on
the
body you want, and I know you want a really good fitness trend, so I'm just telling you that's where you're going. You can't get there without it. The people who generally fail are the people who can't tell you what their numbers today are. And when you get to blood work, well, you get to that and they start telling you what your nutrient levels are in blood, that'll be really fun. But yes, it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be simple. And your life is going to revolve around food and exercise. Everything else is going to be secondary.
Okay, I'm noticing that now. Even if waking up in the morning, I'll try to talk myself out of working out. It's like, no, you should do it because you're almost there. Thinking about, like, oh, maybe I'll eat this junk food. It's like, no, you're almost there. Whether I should take the long way to go somewhere, or the short way, it's like, no, you're almost there. You know, you can get those extra steps in and whatnot. And I have about. I have about four different weight loss apps on my phone that all do different things, and I'm constantly on them, constantly, you know, seeing how much I'm eating and exercise and how close I am and things like that. And I've just been noticing that I wouldn't say I'm obsessed about it, but it is something I definitely think about almost all the time.
That's why they call it a lifestyle. Because, I mean, it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be simple. And they call it a lifestyle. For that reason, you're going to have to change the way you've been doing things.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it's not going to be something you just do it and forget about it. And you're going to start having all kinds of reasons to not do it. It happens to everybody. I don't care how advanced. Jennifer told you the same thing. She's got mornings, gets up, and she doesn't want to do it. You know, it's like, man, I had a rough evening yesterday, 2 days ago. Why should I do this? And part of that discipline, you have to just keep on top of yourself about that. Some days you will be thrilled to do it. Most days you're going to be like, man, I could really use a 12-pack of beer. And, I mean, it's like you'll be walking to the store, and it's like those old Hostess commercials they used to have where the cupcakes and the Twinkies jump up and are talking to you. Yeah, that, because that happens to everybody. It happens to me.
Have you thought about getting a partner? That's
partner?
A little bit more motivated. Yeah, someone that's a little bit more motivated than you, because personally, myself, I hate to exercise, but every time I see a post from Mason, I try to do something. You know, I'm like, I hope this man never sees me and be like, you are fat as hell. So that's what motivates me, but I think I need a partner, somebody to tell me, get the hell up, Mona, let's do this, because I cannot do it by myself. I'll get up here and do a couple of things, and I'm just super lazy like that, and I have to admit that. It's not fun for me. So maybe if you get a partner, somebody that, you know, is a little bit more obsessed than you, that stays on you, you know, you'll see, you know, some different results.
Okay. Okay. I'll now, does this person, does it necessarily have to be someone I can meet in person, or would it, or maybe, you know, maybe on an online group, or it doesn't matter, like maybe which one, you know, which one would be more important? Or preferable, rather.
Well, you said that you were getting the results at home and that you were going to go to a gym. So I would say with somebody already in the gym that you admire their body structure and you see that they're disciplined and ask. And most of the time people are willing to, you know, to work with you and work out with you.
Okay.
Online, I don't think online for you is going to do anything because that's still in the confinement of your home and you don't have to turn the computer on. So to get out there with somebody.
Okay. Okay, that all sounds really good. I guess one more question I have is, it's also diet related. Even though I'm getting smaller, I have like a little bit of a stomach. My stomach is actually not getting smaller, and I kind of wanted to know what could be done about that. Because even if I reach my goal weight, I'm still going to have like a little bit of a stomach. So I kind of wanted to know what I could do to mitigate that.
Find that girl with that hell of a stomach and ask her what she's doing. That's all I can say. You know, that's real talk. Find, you know, when I'm in the shop, I see these little girls with these stuff. I just be looking at them. What do you do? And I do, and I ask them. Find that one, that stomach that you admire, and ask them, because I think the stomach is your hardest muscle. And sometimes the things that we...
Is she referring to, like, stretch skin issues? Or are you just saying you've got something else going on there? Because, like, if you're 300 pounds and now you're going down to 150, you're probably going to have some stretched skin issues.
No, it's not stretched skin. I've always I've never been overweight, but I've always had, like, a little bit of a stomach since childhood.
That little pooch. You're talking about that little pooch.
Yeah. Like, it's a little bit, but it's enough to bother me.
So it's an exercise that's geared to that you're not doing. And so that's why I'm saying find that one with that total six pack, the waist ratio, the everything is boom, and find out what you're not doing.
Mm-hmm.
See how that works for you.
Okay, sounds good.
Thank you very much for giving us a call. Jasmine, please check with us again.
All right, I will.
Been nice hearing from you. which I sounded like it was nice hearing from you. Everything was okay, and then my voice just sat down on me. It's like I got Monique sitting on my vocal cords. Color from 718, you're on live with the Black Channel, even though I may not sound like it.
Good evening, sir.
Where are you from?
This is Chris from Connecticut, sir.
Hello, Chris from Connecticut. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, I had some time to reflect on Easter, as I often do, and I have to say, well, first off, I listened to the beginning of your broadcast, and I heard that aggressive kind of lashing out from the other caller because you told him what he didn't want to hear in terms of his occupation or his career choices, what he was on track in doing. One thing that kind of dawns on me is that Black people in general are not – somehow when you hit upon them with certain things, certain truths, they somehow – they respond back with an arrogance. They respond back with this sort of they have to have this pushback. They have to say, no, you don't know everything. And they try to come at you. And I notice that's not just with the younger crowd, like people, you know, under my generation, but also the older generation as well. And I often find that that comes with that. That's a part of our downfall, is the idea that, you know, one of your threads, I just one example. I mean, one of your posts on Facebook, one of these men was talking about the idea that he basically talks to a lot of the youth in his neighborhood in regards to getting them as, you know, getting them as men together to take an interest in their future. And he was saying that, you know, that he believes that everyone can make it. And I told him not everybody's going to make it. I told him that there is no instruction manual for drive or for a spark, or for getting out there and basically taking the initiative and seizing opportunities. There are libraries that are open all day, yet in the Black communities they're pretty much empty. So I told him pretty much that, you know, if you can reach one out of the five, you know, you're not going to get the other four. You know, and I told him that flat out. And he was saying, you know, but he believed that he could reach the other four. And then I told him, well, that might not happen, brother, and that's not going to happen. But I told him that my faith is in that those people who want it will get it, and those people who don't want it, you know, that's sort of how life sorts itself out. And in regards to elders, in terms of mistakes, I realized that the elders make the same mistakes that I noticed that the young people are making out there, and yet in regards, they still want to chastise the young folk to say, well, I know better. In my case, my family, my father made the same mistake as I did. I've made mistakes as a young man, or, you know, now I'm in my 40s now, my early 40s, but I made mistakes with women. And as you may have heard in my previous calls, but my career was always, for the most part, on point. He made the same mistakes with a Black woman. He married a woman that he was not happy with and that he stayed with and tolerated for a child. And the thing is that he made that mistake, and he was saying that he had all these sorts of second thoughts about marrying my mother at that time. And I said, well, why did you, you know, you're telling me that I've had faults with women, but you've had the same faults. It's just that you stayed with someone for, whether it was for 18 years and whether I stayed with someone for 3 years or even 1 year. It's a question of semantics, really. You have to acknowledge that you also made the same mistakes, as well as my own grandfather made the mistake of actually, he was a Jamaican man, and he had my mother, and he had two illegitimate children. He had two children out of the household, and in Jamaica back then, largely a lot of the men stepped out of the household and had all these types of affairs. And they went, and of course they would bring the child back into the household, and then they'd raise them as you know, with the other children, in some cases to the shame of the household. And so I was even telling my mother, you know, it's almost in a way, when you look at that sort of broken cycle of men going out of the household, or for that matter of men making mistakes, you can see a pattern. And the pattern grows as you start going from grandfather to father to son. And now I'm trying to break that with my children. But looking at it, you know, it's like I now have two children, too. I'm a single father, and I have two children, and I'm trying to impart by fighting for them, the idea of, okay, being a part of their lives and saying, well, you know what, I have to impart this sort of logic where when I get them from their mother on the weekends, like I had them this Easter weekend, you know, well, there should be no nail polish on my four-year-old girl's hands. You know, she's not a woman yet. I don't want her dressed in that way. I don't want her wearing makeup or having earrings. I want her to live the life as a child and grow in intelligence and feed her brain, not cosmetics. I look at my son and I say he has to learn respect. He has to learn to be able to understand to that he's the older, that doesn't mean that he's stronger than his sister and should push her around. So I try to import knowledge, read books to them, give them the idea of numbers and math, and try to see if I can be that influence. But in order to do that, I have to fight for that, and I have to make sure that that happens because, you know, being that it's a divided household, they don't necessarily have that, and that's my fault. But looking at it, I can see that I would have to impress upon them that for the next generation that they have to focus on their goals and getting their master's and their PhDs and getting their own businesses, so therefore they don't have to have a broken household or anything like what I had to contend with, or what my grandfather had to contend with, or what my father had to contend with. So it's a cycle. But in order to break the cycle, you have to be able to admit where you messed up. You have to be able
to... Well, it reminds me of what Corey Holcomb said when he said that if you got a sex tape, you can't say nothing to your kids about dropping out of school.
Right.
You know, it kind of takes the heat off of that. But most of these folk here, whether it's black people in America or overseas, they weren't really trying to build anything, and because they weren't, this is what you got now.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. They really weren't. I'll let you go ahead and have a last call, a word, brother, then I'm going to see if I can do a few more calls here, because I got bored calls right now. They always last hour again to call in, so I got to try to run
through this as I can. I noticed that you were taking heat as well on the fitness challenge for the women. And I noticed that on the Facebook as well. That's why when Jasmine called, I was listening to that with some eagerness and anticipation as to what she was going to say, because there were some women who were lashing out that, you know, well, we have other issues, whether it be that we were, you know, something with men, or, you know, some things that dealt with rape or counseling to that extent. That's why we got fat, and that's why, so you don't know what you're talking about. So you get all these sorts of this different feedback, and I'm listening to it, and I'm saying, you know, well, I sort of said hypotheticals, you know, because they're putting hypotheticals out. I was saying, well, that's not necessarily actuals. But just the same point in fact is that if if it was a man. If a man got fired from his job and he decided to just open up on Haagen-Dazs or the Turkey Hill and gain 80 pounds, and he was fat and then he was broke, would the women still feel towards him, and that would they still have that same empathy towards the man? And so I just turned the logic from a devil's advocate point of view, because I think that we have to get our minds right, but we also have to get our bodies right. And I think that black people in general, men and women, are tied together, almost like it's a symbiotic relationship. We're tied together. So if one rises, if one falls, the other falls. So when I look at black women falling in terms of their weight, or in terms of just the fact that they don't seem to recognize that obesity is killing our young people. Some people are dying at the age of 15 of heart attacks. And that you're not filling your minds, you're not filling your bodies with the right things, that both sides of the coin are falling.
Well, like I say, we become a people who love excuses, and because of that, we have a lot of excuses. So my motto is just no more excuses. Thank you very much, bonus brother, and please call in again. Let me see, we get caller from 443. You're on live with the Black Channel.
Black First. This is Ron calling from Baltimore.
What's on your mind, brother?
Hey, brother. Thanks for allowing me on your show. Hey, I just want to say that to all the black men out there, there are always opportunities to open your or start your own business, whether you have to start from a flea market or just from a stand on a street corner somewhere. You can always start from grassroots and just work your way up. Sometimes things don't go the way you expect them to go. Sometimes there are a lot of trials. Sometimes it may take years, but you can always develop a small business. Years ago, I did like the flea market stuff, and I could tell you the amount of immigrants or foreigners that started at the flea market just selling socks or just selling toothpaste. just one item and how they grew from selling one item to several items, and then they just moved out of the flea market. Then another group or another group of immigrants come in, and they start the whole process over and over again. And those
now, you know what? That has always chapped my hide. It really has. Because I look at things like the swap meet out in California. I look at things like, you know, the swap meets in New York. I can look at those kind of things, and I wonder, why is it my people in that corner of the market on that? They got swap meets in L.A. They're old malls and buildings like that, even outside. They're inside whole buildings. I know this, and I live in Louisiana. And what I'm saying is, but they're owned by Asians.
Yes.
And Mona, if I'm lying right now, call me on it and tell everybody. He don't know what he's talking about, y'all. If I'm lying, call me on it.
Oh, you're absolutely correct.
Right there in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Right there in Los Angeles. I'm not going to say it's there. I will tell you where it's at.
5 minutes away from me. I can get there in 5 minutes.
Owned by Asians.
Yes.
Owned by Asians. Black folk came. And by the way, the Asians own it, but the Hispanics basically run the yard. And the Negroes, I don't know if there's any black folk in there anymore at all. It's been so long since I checked on it. And when why is it my people ain't got no equity in it? The Asians can run the damn thing, and the Hispanics can run the yard. Black folks sitting up here with their lip poked out.
Exactly. And the weirdest thing, 90% of the consumer where I'm from, or consumers, are the black folks. And that's just the most discouraging thing. Now, with me being a vendor there, you know, I experienced all kinds of, like, ignorant black folks. Then I experienced the well-decent black folk that I'm proud to say, hey, well, if you hang in there, you'll get your developed clientele. And I think I heard from one of your videos, you cultivate things and you're cultivating to a better situation. But you just got to let those folks or those ignorant black folks or those hating black men or simps, what some folks call them, you have to let them bypass and you just – stay fast, and you just, you know, you just, your price is your price. Like I said before, 90% of consumers where I'm from, they're all black, and they just spend and they spend. And then I just observe them just haggle the poor black vendors at these particular flea markets. You know, they treat them with so disrespect, but on the other hand, you see them walk to another booth or table, and they're like jolly. They're asking about their family, where they're taking vacations. And it's like, whoa, what are we doing to ourselves? And it's so discouraging to see black men. In particular, you have some women. You know, once I was in the market of selling movies and CDs, not the bootleg. You know, I accumulated resources from all around the country and outside of the country. And there was just a haven of bootleg around me. But I stayed my ground. And I continued to sell. I wasn't making thousands of dollars like the bootleggers were. And I developed my clientele, whether they was majority black, but I did have some white clients. And, hey, you learn your trade, you hang in there, and you'll develop. Now, the only reason why I got out of it, because right around 2008, you know, I heard you mention before, MP3s, you download movies. And then with the onset of Blu-ray, that just kind of killed the market because I was ready to take it to another level, like from the flea market to maybe a storefront. But, you know, that was years ago, but I'm cultivating a new plan. And I've been there before. I tasted what a small business or even a flea market business was like. And it's just you go out there, don't be afraid, start small, maybe one or two items, whatever you plan to sell. And just hang in there. You know, don't be prepared to take loss, but understand that you're just not going to make money overnight. And that's
what
I wanted
to do. I'm tired of seeing situations where all we can be are customers. If we are the majority of the customers, we all be running that thing. Once you know that we are the largest part of the chain, we should be running it. Our people should be running from top to bottom, and that's a shame that we don't consider anything to be valuable unless a non-black person is running it. And why is it that no black people jumped on that? That's the other part of it right there. We got rims and shoes, but we have to go to everybody else, our daily bread, and it's insane. It's just insane. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
and you just you know, just to see black men line up at 12 a.m. in front of a GameStop store just to get the latest video game. It's like, oh, wait a minute, brothers. There are more important things out there than Grand Theft Auto. Mr. Black, thank you for allowing me to come on your show, and I will keep in touch.
Joining us, please call us again. Let's get caught.
Can I say something?
Yeah, Moni, you can say something.
You know, just hearing Kayla call, I think this is what happened. She here was Kayla giving her praises about this black man, and he has this incredible show, and, you know, he talks about black economics, and he probably was, you know, trying to impress her with, you know, what his ideals were, and she had listened to you talk about, you know, that psychology major, and basically probably told him, you know, you went the wrong direction, so why don't you call this man and talk to him? And he didn't do it to learn. He did it to challenge you. That's exactly what happened. At the end, he said he wanted to challenge you. And then I want to talk about religion. Religion, here's the problem with people letting go of religion. Who wants to say something that I have believed in for years has failed me? And who wants to say that I've been, you know, foolish behind something that I believe? And instead of us saying, okay, I was wrong, that didn't serve me a purpose, you know, I wasted a lot of time and energy and money in this, I'll still just go ahead and do that. And the young man just called earlier that said people, you know, basic to these old ideals, that they're staunched in their ways. If you're in this closed, you'll never progress. I am 53 years old, soon to be 54, and I have learned so much from younger people. Because as you get older, you don't read, you don't, you know, you stay in your ways. That's why I have latched on to you, Jason, because you have introduced something to me as an older woman that I've never heard before. And then as far as trying to own a business, having these great ideals, where is our support system? So we go out here, we have this great idea, and we fail. Our people won't say, oh, you know, I commend you for trying. Keep going. You know, think of something else. We get the, I told you so. I told you that wasn't going to work. We don't have a support system to make these changes. We do, you know, decide to stay outside. We tear each other down for saying, oh, I think I want to sell some sunglasses at the swap meet. That's not any money. And we want, although we don't have money, we want to be rich tomorrow. As soon as we say, okay, I'm going to sell this scarf, we want to make $1 million tomorrow. And we have to stop doing that. We have to be patient. We have to know how to build, how to see something grow. We don't know how to do that.
And also not to keep somebody around you who's not building. Black men are fixating on getting a dime, and there's a place in this world for dimes. Don't get me wrong. There's a place for it. But let me tell you, the last time that you were up at 2 a.m. worrying, it was because you couldn't get a dime. It was you are a screwed up individual. It's probably because you owed somebody money and couldn't pay it. Get you people around you who will help you turn these major problems of economics into realities. Get you some people around you who do that. Because we have broken homes, and you cannot make it in that community with broken homes. Because if they've got no set structure at their house, we'd be a fool that they can walk into society and help us to build a set structure. It doesn't work that way. It simply doesn't work that way.
And you know, I really hope that the people are not listening to me right now. We're having a situation right now where the owner is ready to get a salon for our women. And there's six stylists that want to come to the salon and pay booth rent, but they don't want one person to be there. So because this one person is this owner's friend, he doesn't know what to do. So I'm telling them like this, you have to learn how to separate business from personal. And that's where your statement came. We are social workers. We have to start doing that. And I had to tell him, anything that's going to cause you to lose money, You can't let that happen. You're in business for business. So if that means that young lady can't go, she can't go. You have to weigh the people that are going to pay you against this one person. If this person gets an attitude because she can't go, that wasn't your friend in the first place. And he doesn't know what to do. And I'm like, gotta man up. This is business, not personal. So his resolution is, just let it play out. And I'm like, no, you can't let it play out. You have to let this young lady know right now what's going to happen. Because you're doing a disservice to her and yourself. Let her find out that she's not coming so she can vent, cuss, quit, do whatever she's going to do, and then maybe realize, you know, that this is the best thing. We have to take emotion out of business as well. And that's something that I had to learn as a business owner. I never told anyone this was my business for 4 years. Because I didn't want to feel like I was better than somebody. Or I didn't want them to feel like I thought I was better than somebody. But once that didn't work, it was like, because I said so. Because I'm the owner. Because this is my business. Because this is how I keep a roof over me and my son's head. And that seemed like harsh talk. But I had to develop that. And that's what's killing us, too. We want to be friendly. This is not a friendly situation. This is how I keep a roof over my head and my children if I have some. This is how I feed my family. Discounts, do you get a discount when you got to pay your bill? When you go to Nordstrom's, do they give you a discount? Can you get a service today and pay them later? Can you write a check for Nordstrom's and they hold it till next week? We have their merchandise. We always want the discount price, the brotherly, sisterly love. What can you do for me? You take food out of my mouth. And it's hard to be business owner dealing with your own people. The hookup. I'm not in here for the hookup. I don't have it like that. I'm done again.
Squad, all right, sister. They're learning something. I hope they're picking up some game. Caller from 301, you're on live Black Channel.
Yeah, there's no questions about that.
Okay, he's having a conversation with somebody. Caller from 301, are we interrupting your little debate?
You go back all nonsense, man.
Okay, caller from 301 is doing something. I don't know if he knows. Caller from 305, you're on live with Black Channel.
Hello?
Yes, you're on live. What's your name?
This is Eric. I'm actually just listening in, Black, because I called in earlier.
Okay, well, let me go ahead and put him back on here. One of these years, I suppose, they'll get that little number one fixed. Or not. Let's see now. Caller from 313, did I talk to already?
What's going on, TBA?
Yeah, did I talk to you all tonight?
No. I'm from Detroit, but I'm calling from Japan.
Oh, okay. I know who this is then.
No. I just recently discovered your channel. I want to touch bases on. I remember you was talking to a guy from Japan before, and he was all hype about how it's so much happier over here and stuff like that. But it's not really the case.
You might be in a different part of Japan than he's in. He was referring to how, you know, other people, the Russians are doing business and Americans are doing business, but Black folks, especially like Africans, aren't really got anything popping over there. So that's really what he was referring to.
Okay. I thought he was referring to,
so there's opportunities open, but as usual, we're not taking advantage of any of them.
Exactly. Oh, and there's another topic I want to touch on you about. I recently seen one of your videos, and like you was going into the relationship of failure with the parents, and that really hit home with me. It had me really reanalyzing my parents and like how I grew up and things like that.
Well, I'm glad you hear that. One of the biggest mistakes that we make in the Black community is because our parents don't actually, as a group, the older generations don't really have any accomplishments. So what they do is they indoctrinate their children to respect them, or really we should say obey them, because the children don't respect them, without accomplishments. And
exactly,
that's a fraud when you try to, because you have to bully somebody. If you have real power, you don't have to bully them. And especially if you have respect, they will be following behind you. You won't have to coerce them or anything else into getting them to do what you want. They will follow behind you. But black elders don't have that ability, because they spent their lives having sex and getting shoes. And once they're too old to have more sex and the shoes don't look fly on your old crow's feet anymore, then now they want respect. Respect that they spent
exactly.
a lifetime
and then
never
now
earned.
It kind of, I'm sorry about that. But like now it seems like I'm like the go-to guy. It's like I can't fix problems that you already had. I'm still trying to make a life for myself, so I can't build my own life at the same time trying to rebuild yours or try to add to what you already have.
Yeah, too many black people, let's just be honest, most black folk today have children, assuming that when they get old, their children are going to take care of them. It's a third world dynamic. That's something for Nicaragua or the Philippines or Guam. That's not something for a first world industrialized nation. That is obsolete. But Negroes have a 500-year-old mindset, even though they live in the most industrialized country on the planet. That shows you our failure, that everybody else is moving forward, and our cowardice is making us say, oh, when I get too old to work, my children will take care of me. Why do your kids have to take care of you? Because I spent my life doing nothing. I ain't built up nothing to take care of myself. So guess what? What happens is the kids have nothing to start with, and they don't have the ability to take care of themselves, much less you. And that's what happens.
Another topic I want to touch on you right quick. I have to go to work in a minute. I recently seen a post. You talk about the Eastern Star, now black people want to, you know, show it off. And when I first got here, I was, like, lost in the world. And I joined the Freemasons for a minute. Then I just figured out it's basically another religion. You go, you give in tithes, basically. I'm like, this is not what I want to do. But that's when I was just trying to find my way in the world. I did that for about 3 months, and then I realized that's not what I really want to do.
White men do not start fraternal organizations, secret society, whatever, because they're bored and they want a commune. They start those organizations because they want to restrict access to power, wealth, and influence. And they get together in those groups for what? We are together as an elite group in this room, Skull and Bones, and whatever else, Halliburton, the Trilateral Commission, Council on Foreign Relations. It's not so much about, I guess money controls the world, so I suppose it's about that. But they didn't get together as friends. You heard about Bill Clinton doing sex tricks with all his interns. How many women at the Council of Foreign Relations has he slept with? That's
exactly.
Not the reason him and his wife are in it. Same thing for the Bilderbergs. Same thing, Skull and Bones. It's a bunch of guys, and they're not gay. They have one thing in common. We want to be the men who are running the world, but that's going to take power, wealth, and influence. Even John Kerry never got it for himself. He married it. But that shouldn't be bad, because Prescott Bush married it. Didn't have any of his own, and he married it. Black men get together in the room, the first thing we want to find out, who's it? That's the first thing we want to know. And we don't even want a female with power, wealth, and influence. That's the damn shame of Prescott Bush and John Kerry, a female who had some power, wealth, and influence so that she could bump them up into that upper level. We don't even do that. As black men, don't even do that. We don't even try to make sure that our secret societies are worth joining. So that's what you meant by it's just like church. Hell yeah, you ain't getting nothing out of it. It's just there. That's all.
Not exactly. It just seems like I was just basically lining the pockets of the upper members. And I'm like, oh, this is basically just a pyramid scheme I'm a part of. So I stopped going. I had a couple of friends that stuck with it, but it wasn't really.
Boy, you thought it was going to really... You thought you were going to get all the traffic tickets taken care of and wouldn't have to pay off those student loans. Man, you thought it was going to be just I mean, you just thought that, man, I'm in. And then you found out this ain't about nothing. Why? Because your people have no power, wealth, or influence. So when you got that traffic hit, you just got to pay it. Why? You have no influence. And when you're student loans, you just got to pay it. Why? Because you have no power. And that place you want to move into, that car you want to buy, you can't get it. Why? You have no wealth. And this organization ain't helping you get any either. They are not gatekeepers of power, wealth, and influence. They're just sitting around stroking each other's egos. It's worthless and it's pointless. And they don't tell young people like you that. You just join it and you find out later that it was wealthless, that it was worthless and pointless.
Yeah. I just kind of had to figure it out. I was just sitting around and, you know, talking to a couple of other members and seeing what they was doing. And I'm like, damn, it's nothing really happening. It's just like regular people. We just get together on Tuesdays and Thursdays and, you know, reenact old school rituals, but it's not really doing anything.
Yes, because I asked a few people that, you know, have joined, you know, why are they in it? And they say that, you know, because we take care of each other. And then I'm looking at them and you got a broke too. So how much care are you guys doing? So we get sold on a lot of mess because they, like Jason said, they don't have any power or wealth influence. Even after one of the Rothschilds, he said, I don't care anything about the law. Give me the money. Because with the money, he can change the law. He can, you know, bypass the law. He can, you know.
Give me control of a nation's money, and I care not who writes its laws. Because at the end of the day, they must come back to me.
Yes.
Politicians are employees. They are the employees of the people who have the money, by definition. Yes. That's why they have to get elected and reelected. They are employees who runs the money, even under monarchies. The monarchies are subject to the bank at the end of the day. We as black people want power, as Mona said. We want rewards. We do not want to do anything that it requires to get those rewards. And that's why we can't get anything done. We keep trying to bypass steps, and we can't figure out why we're not succeeding. There is no short success. There isn't any. It's not there. But boy, we keep trying to find it. And if we can't find it, we'll make it. And the only thing that we're really doing is making a formula for failure. You as a young man who's progressive, at least if you want to join that, there should have been something waiting for you. But what you found out the hard way is that a black secret society is worthless because black people have no power, wealth, and influence. Thus, what is the point of forming this society? Why is it even here?
Exactly.
I'll let you have the last word.
All right, well, I just recently, just like I said before, touch bases with the network. It's helped me make big changes within my life and making me relook at everything. Just keep doing what you're doing, and I'm listening, and also making changes.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, brother. Please call in again. Like Mona, they got these Eastern Stars, and I don't know if you've ever been invited to join them. What's the point? A bunch of little old church ladies, they have no power, wealth, and influence. You take a look at Hillary Clinton, are the Eastern Stars involved with that? You take a look at white women gain power, wealth, and influence and don't have to deal in that nonsense. Black people love titles. That's what the Eastern Stars is really about. Black women didn't have a title, so they made their own.
Right.
The black Masons, they didn't have anything, they made their own. Instead of getting power, wealth, and influence, when you got that, you don't have to worry about the titles.
Exactly.
We refuse to do it. We want to bypass steps. And then can't figure out why this doesn't work. Caller from 901, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hey, how you doing? My name is Epoch Shalal from Memphis.
What's on your mind, brother?
Yeah, I was just calling to see what spiritual system anybody have out there that they use to help empower their community or empower themselves. You know, I look at the average traditional religions myself, but I was just seeing, do you in particular or any people on that look at anything outside of the mainstream that's been pushed towards us since we've been in this country?
Yeah, I don't subscribe to any religion whatsoever. You can have whatever you want to. I'm not a big person in religions. I'm a big person on power, wealth, and influence.
I understand where you're coming from, brother. This is my first time being on the show, and I have a lot of respect for you, and I'm glad to see it. All I was going to say is when it comes to religion, is I don't come from the idea where, I guess people say the spook-out approach. I look at it as a part of empowerment, as far as like a Marcus Delaney, changing your mind frame from one to another. Because religion, you have an outlook on life, a worldview. So you look at it from if you look at it from Dr. Amos Wilson, you know, because he talks about wealth a lot of times. He says wealth is nothing unless you have a relationship. Because if you have $1 million, you're on a desert island, what would a million dollars buy you on a desert island? Nothing. So it's your relationship between you and that other person, the agreement y'all have made, and when you change the mind, you can change that relationship with that money, even with yourself. Because a lot of times we buy ourselves and don't deal the time to deal with the emotional trauma that we went through in this country. So that's what it comes out as. Let me buy all the rims. Let me buy the biggest this and that, because really we shallow because we feel like without those things, we are nothing, what we've been taught since we were kids.
Yeah, we as black tend to focus on intangibles. Ego is an intangible. We buy rims not to have power, wealth, and influence. We buy rims our ego. Ego is an intangible. If we actually focused on that, we'd have something to show for us.
Exactly, brother. One thing I look at, me personally, I look at Ifa, I look at African religions. It has pushed me more to be more Afrocentric. It gives me an empowerment. It also reclaims our culture. And it's not coming from, I'm putting everything on the Creator. God will make it happen some kind of way. It's really to take charge of your life, take charge of your community. Your community counts on you, and it's your religious duty to protect your black brother and sister. And when you come from that point of view, I think that's a very powerful tool. Kind of like saying, I don't want to throw away religion only because bad religion has been put on us. Just like the gun, that's a tool that can save your life or can take a life.
Well, I think that black people would be better off dealing with the problems that are in front of us. Your motivation, I guess, if your religion helps you, if that's something that helps you with that, that's great. Me, myself, looking outside my front door is what helps me. But I guess I'm special. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
I'm just going to say I appreciate the time. We must change our mind frame. Money won't just do it, because if you give a lot of black people money, they're going to go spend it with everybody else because they haven't dealt with the personal thing of who they are and reclaim our history, stand hopeful.
Thank you very much for checking in with us. Let me see if I can grab a call here. Caller from the 510, you're live with the Black Channel.
Hello, Black Folks.
Okay, what's your name and where you calling from?
My name is Jay. I'm from Oakland.
And what's on your mind, Jay?
I want to say I really enjoy listening to your broadcast. I've been listening to it for a while now, about a month. And I just want to talk about the last broadcast I heard where you were talking about Pan-African doesn't exist or something like that. Well, recently I just traveled to Africa for 2 months for my first time. I was in Nigeria, and I also went to Togo and Benin, and then finally my last week there I was in Ghana. And I just want to know, I'm considering about going back there and maybe establishing something, because I just when I was out there I seen opportunity, and I've seen like other races of people out there engaging in business, and so I'm thinking that, you know, maybe I enjoy it. I enjoy the lifestyle. I enjoy I just enjoy the people, the culture, everything. And I'm thinking about maybe, you know, going back there and investing in something, because right now I'm not really doing nothing out here. I mean, I finished college about 2 years ago. Got a degree in finance with a minor in corporate management, and I just haven't been able to make any real moves. So I'm thinking about maybe,
but if you're not able
going
to make it here, I mean, if you weren't able to make it happen here, and you know the language, you know the land, you know the social structure, and is the richest technically country on the face of the earth, what makes you think that you're going to uproot, go to a place where you do not speak the language, you do not know the culture, you do not know the economic lay of the land, they are financially and economically suppressed, but you're going to be able to make a better go there than here? You're doing something wrong over here.
Yeah, I just see it as being like more easier to start a business there, like it's cheaper, you know.
Okay, what is the impediment that you have here that you would not have over there?
I mean, like all the laws it takes to start any kind of business, your licenses you got to get, the taxes, just it seems like it's just like.
Okay, were you under the impression that they didn't have laws there? Laws and regulations.
Yes, yes.
You're under the impression they don't have those in Nigeria too?
No, I do. I know they do, but from what I heard, that it's easier. Like a lot of times, you can just pay off people and stuff, and just and they won't really be as stringent as they are here. Like you can't do that here. You can't just pay off nobody, and you have to go through the process. So
okay,
I
but what you're saying
is
you have to pay here or pay there.
Do I have to
so
pay? No,
the difference.
It really is, if you're paying both places, yeah, it's really no difference. But I'm just saying, like, what I saw, like, it just seemed like it would be more, I don't know, just I guess maybe trying something new, I guess. And it seems like it would be more, conducive. I'm not saying I want to just up and just move and live there, but maybe, like, I'm considering, like, trying it out. Because I just came back in February. And
the problem is that you live in Oakland and you can't get anything in there while the Asians, the Arabs, and the Hispanics all around you are. Now, if you can't make nothing happen in Oakland, what makes you think you're going to be able to transform in Nigeria? You're not able to make nothing happen on Fifth Street.
Yeah.
Why don't you focus on proving you can make something happen here? And then you can start about taking that success around the world, because you haven't even demonstrated that you can do it here yet.
I just don't know where, what avenues are open here. I don't see any. I don't see any. I haven't seen any avenues for me here. I've been trying to figure out and network and just figure out like what can I do? I can't seem to get my foot in the door nowhere, because they every time I apply somewhere, they treat my degree like it's nothing to them. But, I mean, I don't really see myself working for, I don't really see myself working for a corporation. I see myself, in the long run working for myself. But I just don't, know what avenues, I have, so. I don't know, I felt at peace out there too, and it's not just the business aspect. I just felt at peace, and I felt cool. But when I came back here, it's just like the stress just came back. Like I just, I don't know,
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
If you went to Africa, what race of people would be your target market?
My African people.
Okay, so
Black people.
What would happen if your own people didn't embrace you? What would be next? And you went across the, the world and spent all this money, and your own people didn't embrace you because you're targeting Black people, and they have a resentment for you coming there from America. What would you do next?
Well, it would be a lesson learned, and from there, I would probably just have to move on, but at least I know I tried it, at least I know, okay, at the end of the day, I tried it, it didn't work, I have to move on,
So you would feel better failing in a foreign country as opposed to failing right here, where you could pick yourself up quicker here than you could going across Africa, and that's what he's trying to tell you. figure it out here so you can have a better success rate over there. And if you're having difficulties here, you're not going
to... Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah, it sounds like you're trying to find a shortcut or from something. I'm not sure what it is, but, brother, that's, in all honesty, that's a pipe dream. You don't have a plan. You don't have any means. You can get your money to get your paper together here in America. Why would we possibly think that somehow you figure out something in Africa in America? What you really mean is you think you're going to get over there and somebody's going to give you something. Brother, you are in for a big surprise. A lot of folk are online talking about folk in Africa are giving this and giving that, and nobody can actually show any proof of it. So here's all I want you to do, young man. How old are you?
I'm 31.
Okay, well, you're not a young man anymore. Why don't you go ahead and try that? I am hereby signing off on your proposition to go to Africa and try whatever it is you think you want to do. I'm hereby signing off on it. I think that would be a good idea for personal development. I think it'll be a great idea. I think you should go ahead and do that. One question. How you leave?
How am I leaving?
Yeah.
I just came back, and how am I going to leave? I was planning on just saving up money for this year, just saving up enough money to where I can go there with enough money to live, but also have money to invest in, you know, certain opportunities out there.
Okay, so your plan is to work for the next year in the United States and then leave and go over there. So in other words, you don't even have the ability to go there, but you're talking about going there.
Well, I can make money. I have the ability to make money to go there. I mean,
okay,
I have to do
it. What you are saying is that you do not actually have the ability to go there.
No, not at the present time, no. Yeah,
okay.
Not the present time, no.
Yeah.
Not financially, no.
Okay, I want you to keep thinking about what I just said and keep repeating that to yourself. It'll eventually dawn on you what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
It's not getting there right now, but just keep thinking it over, man. It'll light bulb will go on here in a minute. It'll go on for you for a little bit. Just think about those circumstances and think about what I said, and the light bulb will go on here in just a little bit. I'll let you have the last word.
I thank you for your advice, and keep doing what you do. Black first.
Black first, brother. Thank you very much for joining us. Mona, their parents scared. They got these kids doing everything. They want to run around the world because their parents did not teach them how to build an economy here. They have literally told the children, run around the world. Run to Africa, run anywhere. Can't tell them what they're running from. They're just scared, Mona.
Yeah.
If everybody wants to know what I meant by scared before that phone call, that was it right there. They're just scared. I felt better when I got there. That sounds like love. Can anybody define for me what love is in a marriage? What is love? I'm getting married. Why? Because I love him. Nobody can define it, but he's going to go chasing it. We got our children running scared. Caller from the 330, you're live with the Black Channel.
Black first.
What's your name? Where are you calling from?
David from Ohio.
What's on your mind, brother?
Two things. One, I want to go back to the conversation we had a little earlier with the gentleman who was talking about his joining of different groups, and that wasn't working out for him. I'm a professional, and it's from my experience and my exposure that, and Mona, TBA, you can disagree with me if you want to. I'm more than willing to hear your side of the argument. I think in this day and age, whatever position you obtain in life in terms of stature, it's 90% who you know and 10% what you know. And that's the only way I can ration some of the innate incompetence at some of the higher levels of the hierarchy structure that appear in front of me today. But when you look behind the face of things, you notice this person is this person's cousin, or this person is that person's second niece, or this person, that person, were both in this organization or both sponsored this charity function. And I've come to realize that a lot of power in this day and age is not given to the most qualified. It's given to the person who's most familiar.
Okay. We as black people do not actually understand how power is generated, originated, and organized. Power is not most potently organized among strangers. It is most potently organized among who you know, because they have an allegiance to the current order. Black are so easy to infiltrate because we love bringing in outsiders. We love it. We adore it. That's why they break us before we get there, because we don't know how to cultivate the familiar. Here's what you do when you want power. You get somebody like a Steve Jobs, the smartest man. You put him at the top, and everybody else, his brother, friends, cousins, the guys he's known for 30 years, his close confidants, and that's what you build a company on. Because they all have allegiance to what? To the guy at the top, and thus they run interference with the guy at the top, and the guy at the top protects all of them. That's why on your board of directors of all your biggest corporations, you got Randall Stevenson at the top, and you got Ralph De La Vega and everybody else in the company right below him, all his longtime buddies. And Randall's what? A longtime disciple of who? Ed Wood from SBC. And when they became the current AT&T and Ed left, who stepped up? The guy who was below Ed, who had always backed him. That's the way power works. When was the last time you heard a vice president executive of AT&T getting fired? Oh, yeah, it ain't happened. Why? Because Randall blew $40 billion in a failed bid to buy T-Mobile, and he's still there. Oh, they fined him. You know how much they fined him? $2 million. $2 million out of $22 million for the year. That's right. That's the way power works. Who cares if we ain't got the best cell phones? Who cares if we ain't got the best service? We're the richest. Sounds like we got the best to me. That's the way power works. Black people would have that if we unified together. But we wouldn't even do that. We would at least have something resembling power if we got together. And what you said is 10% what you know. But you know what? If we all got together, that 10% would feel like 100%. And then we would have both. If who you know. Yeah, I got all the people with 10% with me. And we're all together. So it's who I know and what I know both working together for me. We as black people never make it that far. We never make it that far. This thing will work. Understand something. Umar Johnson said it, and he's absolutely correct when he said that economic science is a branch of military science. Black people lose wars for the same reason that we lose economic struggles. Same rules apply, but we don't get it. What you are describing is nepotism. So that's perfectly fine that you have a problem with nepotism if it's failing. But it's not failing for them. You take a look at Goldman Sachs, take a look at Chase, take a look at J.P. Morgan. Those are all the epitome of nepotism, and it works. It's working for them. Now, does that mean they're not vulnerable? No. They are vulnerable if you can get somebody smarter and more organized to go up against them. But no matter how much nepotism is going on there, you challenge them and you find out just how quickly they can get organized. You find out just how that nepotistic organism can move. And you're like, damn, I didn't know it could move that fast. Yep. Moves damn fast. Berkshire Hathaway. You all know how many mistakes Warren Buffett has made. You know how many of his predictions have been wrong. But guess what? They rally behind him. They protect him, and he protects them. That is how power works. And he's not worried because those are all the people that he picked. All the people who have always backed him. So guess what? His destiny becomes theirs. His fortunes come theirs. If it goes good for him, it goes good for them. If it goes bad for him, it goes bad for them. So guess what? They have a vested interest in running interference and protecting them. That is how power works in economics, in school, in military, you name it. That's how it works. We don't know how to do that as a people because we don't do that. You do you and me do me. That's us. Man, you on your own. You do that over there. That's what we do.
I can totally vouch for that. When I was in college, I noticed that a lot of the ethnic subgroups, like you had the Asians, they all studied together. You had all the foreign exchange students in the Middle East, they all studied together. And being black, wasn't so many of us in higher education. So already we're at disadvantage. And then the few of us that are together, we party together, but once it came down to studying, we didn't want to study together. And those of us who are in my seat who are heavy studiers, because we are in the math engineering fields, we got kind of pushed to the side. So we learned how to do things on our own, which actually turned out to be a benefit, because when things got rough and the subgroups couldn't get the answers they needed, because cronyism, like you said, is rampant around the place. So, I mean, I'll just go out and say it. There's tests passed all over the place. They pass some tests, they pass some information, and it ain't one school, it's all of them. It's rampant. And it's getting to the place where you start to see it in junior highs and high schools now. Mom used to teach this class, and now in this subgroup, she's giving them their old materials, which is legal to do now because it's no longer the official material, and they're getting a head start, or they're going taking classes online, a certain subject 2 years ahead of time. So when they go to college, all they do is just sit in class and let you sit there, struggle with it. They already know it. They just sit in there to get a credit.
Welcome to the real world. We have laws against insider trading. It happens every single day. But guess what? Samsung is kicking their asses. Let's hear it for unity. Proper unity. We could do the same thing, except we own some you do you me do me being intelligence for white folks. So there you go. I'll let you have the last word.
My last thought is, of course, black first, number one. Number two, my last thought is, I was talking to the brothers in the room, and I was wondering, if you or Mona knew of any site or any website out there or any resource out there that has a list of black businesses that do international shipping within the country, so that no matter where we're at, like I'm in an area where there isn't that many black businesses, if I want a product, I can always go online and order it and still support my people.
I don't.
Even for me, myself, I can't really think of any black business that I actually worked with that does international shipping. No. Are you talking something like FedEx or DHL or something for a specific type of product?
Well, any kind of black business that if I'm in another state or another part of the United States, I can order online from them or call them and order it, and they'll ship it to me.
No, we've had a tremendous problem with black business, black economic shippers. First of all, that's a very, very deep market to get into. You know, you would need somebody with hundreds of millions of dollars to be able to crack something like that, because you got to deal with the ports, you have to deal with customs, you have to deal with longshoremen. So, like I said, that would be difficult even under normal circumstances. Even foreign corporations would have a problem with that. But off the top of my head, as far as knowing, no, I'm not familiar with one either. Not one that I would feel like recommending, no. But before you do that, however, because sometimes I'm asked that question, before you do that, your first objective should be, wait a minute, before I worry about can I get a black business to do shipping for me, let me find out about my own business together. Because so often, that's the other part of that previous caller who wants to go to Africa. So often we're thinking about where we're going to be 10 years down the road. We never even dealt with where we are today. So focus 100% of your energies on taking care of the tangible that's in front of you. 5 years from now, we'll take care of it. Because here's the sad part, brother. Right now, you ain't got very many blacks at all on any level that you are going to be able to do business with on any level. Worry about that much less than you worry about getting yours started because, as said in Terminator Salvation, don't ask for resistance is. If you hear this message, you are resistance. That's where we at right now. Everybody listening to this broadcast, don't ask where the front line is. If you hear this broadcast, you are the front line. There ain't nobody out there running interference for you. There is nobody standing between you and the white supremacist structure. The ha-ha-hee-hee people ain't trying to hear that. Too busy collaborating. You are the front line, brother. You are that international shipping company you're looking for. Congratulations, we found him. He got real quiet when I said that. He's still on the line.
I'm still here, brother. I'm still here.
Because they didn't tell you the truth like this. Your white counterparts in school, they've got institutions. And when I say institutions, I mean businesses, organizations that do all anything you can look up in the phone book, they've got people that they can call on in play already. You ain't got that. You are going to have to build that now. You are going to make the decision to leave the plantation now. That is you. Not them, that's you. Thank you very much for checking in with us today, brother. Let me go ahead and take caller from the 310. You're on live Black Channel. 310, last try. You're on live with the Black Channel. Okay, caller from 310 has been abducted. Caller from 480, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Just listening.
Okay, caller from 480 is incapable of pressing 1 on his keypad. I'm probably going to wrap it up here shortly myself, but I'll take a couple more calls in the meantime. Caller from 510, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hello?
Yes, you're on live.
I was just listening. I didn't press 1, but
I pressed 1, but I didn't press the second one.
Okay.
He's working on that second time concept, which is good. If at first you don't speed, don't do nothing, apparently, is the rule. Okay.
No question.
No.
Do you think we have a fixation on my voice is going out too, of name dropping in opposed to being the names that people drop?
We don't have confidence in ourselves because we've never seen it. How many black people know a black banker? All right. And because you do not know a black banker, that concept seems foreign to you. It seems like alchemy. That's why. Because we haven't seen anybody do it. And so it seems like science fiction. Somebody comes to us and tells us, Mona, do you know how hard it would be for the average black male, black person, to consider opening a hardware store? We are regressing. We're traveling the other way. And that's why we're looking for other people to push these responsibilities off on. We want somebody else to take care of it because we are scared, Mona.
Yes.
We are scared. We are scared of taking out a loan for ourselves. We're scared of getting our credit together to take out one. We are scared, Mona. Not a little bit. We are scared to death. We are terrified of what it would mean to put ourselves out there, so we look for somebody else to play blocker. We look for somebody else to do that for us.
Yeah.
That's why we look for somebody else. Now, the music business is different. That we can wrap our heads around. We watch so much TV, that's the only image given to us. That we can see. International shipping, man, TV doesn't show us any black international shippers. Black computer programmers, they don't spend much time doing that. Black lawyers, black doctors, they don't inundate us with that. They don't flood us with that. And our parents, our surroundings don't do it either. That's why. So a degree in sociology, psychology, we can wrap our heads on that. Hell, that's what the school teaches you. You see your teacher, we can wrap our brains around that. Having our own IT firm, huh? Our own shipping company, what's that? A black version of Lowe's, so we can sell some of those gymnastic strength shower curtain rods. A black TV station. No. That's what's sexy and cute. We are still operating off of ego. And when it is time to eat, we look for someone else to help us when it's time to eat.
Okay.
That's what we do. Caller from 301. Did I take your call already?
I'm just listening. I don't Blog Talk is at that point. I'm not sure if you're noticing this thing, but Blog Talk's at that point where it's just picking up calls. I mean, it don't matter if you press one or you don't press one. It's picking up calls.
I think I already saw yours. I think I already seen yours before. That's what I was saying. I think I already got you already, so make me want to holler, Mona, throw up my hands. That's just the bottom line. Just make me want to throw up my hands. I'll see if I can grab one more call here, though. Caller from 905, you're on live with Black Chat. Okay, caller from 905 got abducted. Department of Homeland Security is giving them hell, Mona. That is, again, why we refer to this as the most dangerous radio broadcast on earth, because you might not make it to the end. Not necessarily for me, but you might not make it, especially if you call in, but I dare you to try. Caller from 803, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hello?
Yes, you're on live, 803. That was that unmuted you heard.
I press one again, but I didn't.
Okay. Well, I'll put him back over here. Well, Mona, it seems like we're not going to be able to get very far without the Department of Homeland Security either intimidating or abducting them. So I guess I'll just go ahead and leave it at that. But the reason, Mona, is because we are afraid, we're frightened, we're scared. And we are most comfortable when somebody else is running our lives. It's a plantation mindset, and we have accepted every inch of it. Black people as a group today are not happy and don't feel secure unless there is someone else we can go to. Like I explained about Mimi Faust, I mean, if you're going to whore yourself out and whatnot, how hard is it to get a video camera? But she didn't have confidence in herself to do something as simple as sell her own whore tape. She didn't even have enough confidence in herself to do that. Mona, we really do believe that, I used to say white ice, but we really do believe that non-Hispanic ice is colder. We really do believe that. We do not believe that anything that we lay our hands on is worth anything. We don't believe that. And that's why we're in the condition we're in today. We don't believe that for a moment. They don't even have to fight to make us intimidated anymore. We do that by ourselves. They don't even have to intimidate the children anymore. This complete and total lack of a black example, look what it's done to us. Look what it's been, what it's done to devastate us. Just take a look at us. Brothers and sisters, cowardly parents breed cowardly children. Yeah, it's on. If you are a cowardly parent, don't think that that cowardice is somehow going to leapfrog your kids. They can see you. Mona, they don't understand. They can see the fear in your eyes. When the police pull you over, when the landlord shows up, when you jump when the clerks at the white store show up, your children can see the fear in you. Your children understand when you have subscribed to a religion because you wanted to be there and it gave you empowerment. And your children can understand, they notice, they can pick up on that when they see that you are subscribed to a religion because you're just scared. Your children can understand when you are voting for a politician because he gives you power. And your children can understand when you're voting for a politician because you are just too cowardly to pick up your destiny and carry it for yourself. Your kids can see that. They can see it as sure as they can see the sun in the sky at noontime on a cloudless day. They can see it. And what's happened is three generations of cowards have been telling themselves that I don't have to worry about this. My kids will not see my cowardice, and that's not what's happened. We have turned to religion. We have turned to politics. We've turned to sociology. We've turned to academia. We have turned to everything that tells us to go ask someone else for our freedom, justice, and equality. Everything. Except us. We don't actually believe that we can. We don't actually believe that we are good enough. We don't believe that. That's why most black people do not make it into upper management. Most black people do not. Do you know the only way that you can make it into upper management, Mona, in reality, at most corporations, the only way that you as a black person can make it into upper management is if you're a black female, they just give that to you as a trophy. If you're a black man, that's the only way that you legitimately make it into upper management. And that will only happen once you demonstrate to them that you have the ability to run your own company and challenge them. Now, if you show that, now they're going to be quick to elevate you. But if you don't show that, they won't do it. But guess what? That is not going to happen if you're scared. Not going to happen if you're cowardly. There is no place at the table of freedom for cowards. It's not there. It's not there, people. Time for us to start discussing some real things. Let's start discussing some tangibles. Because all the intangible stuff, being proud of your degree, being proud of what church you go to, being proud of school you went to, being proud I voted for Obama, You're not gaining anything and you're not getting anything out of that. That's why we enjoy it so much. We have to get over our fear of failing, Mona.
Yes.
That's why we look for somebody else who has power and we bow down because we are afraid of failing. And that's why I told them to stop reading those books, get out there and start doing. But I don't want to get out there and start doing. Why not? Because I might fail. But you can't see it if you don't risk it. You aren't going to learn anything sitting under that book. You aren't going to learn anything if all you do is listen to this broadcast. Of course, you need to be here. But you need to be here so that we can help you to reaffirm and bolster yourself. And when you turn it off, get back to work. This is not the work in and of itself. This is a component of it. But your fear is going to prevent you from doing anything further. I'll let you the last word, Mona.
My last will be this. We have to stop saying that we don't have money because most people don't see the majority of the money that they make because they don't spend it correctly. They don't save it correctly. What are you doing with your money? How are you using your money to get you to black empowerment? That's the question that you have to ask yourself. And we are the vehicle of reinforcement. Books are vehicles of reinforcement after you go outside and apply yourself. Fear will stop you from doing anything. And you have to have I'm a woman. I have I will not be defeated attitude. And that will make me step out and do some of the craziest things. But at least I know I tried to do something. And maybe I didn't have no business doing it, but I stepped out there and did it. And you're going to have to step out there. Come outside of that box. Let anybody tell you what you can't do. You find out what you can't do. But you can't find out what you can't do until you do it. Black First, brother.
Black First, thank you very much for joining us. Corey Holcomb said it, and it's very true. Your way ain't working. If you are relying on religion, we've been doing it for a few hundred years. How's that working out for us? We already know. Relying on politics, we've been doing that for a century. How's that working out for you? Relying on, quote, education, been doing that for four decades. How's that working out for you? The only thing that we have not tried is economics. That's the only thing we haven't tried. It's time. It's time for us to try that now. No more excuses. And this concludes tonight's broadcast of the BlackChannel.net radio. I am your host, your brother, your humble servant, the Black Authority. And until next time, brothers and sisters from around the world, remember that black is the future, and the future is uncompromising.